and it's a short year, it's full sound. Well, before then, the term will be ready for consideration. As we will see, the last item on the agenda is looking at the third quarter report, report program as it's currently adopted. So we start at 10. We apologize to those of you who very enthusiastically signed up here at 9:30, which I take it is done. So then let's go on. We welcome the DG of National Treasury, and I don't know why the Wealth Commission is hiding there. Mr. Mania, oh, he's not here. We see some controversy in there. So, you know, we will have a whole discussion now about why you're hiding and so on behind the National Treasury DG and so on. So we would like you to come to the front as is normally the case. Welcome to the team from National Treasury. It's boring, you know, all of you. When the commissioner comes on board, he will actually speak to us about his team. But we know many of them by now. Over to you, DG. What we said to Treasury repeatedly is that when they appear before us, they must respond to issues we've raised previously so that we don't bring the same questions again and again. It's like a starting block, and then you build on it. Otherwise, we just cross the same issues. So that's what he's going to do, and he's going to deal with the last quarter. Over to you, Mr.
Jim, just to place on record, which David Mania has submitted a written apology, and he is attending appropriation, not appropriation. It is appropriation in a way. Appropriation committee meeting, so thank you. Thank you, and we note that Minister Gordon is not here, and accept he has important business to attend to, so thank you for the courtesy of sending us the letter.
Explain, the minister is only required to be in Parliament, so be clear about these things, when his budget is presented to the committee, when the budget goes, and personally, if I have my own way or the Parliament doesn't agree, when the annual report is here, he should be here. But this has not been warned in the chairperson's committee of chairperson. How do you think the minister should come? DG, I was listening, and Cindy in particular. How do you think, quite honestly, that the minister should also appear compulsory when an annual report is presented? Those two occasions are non-negotiable. And then, when we have certain specific matters, like South African Airways, which has moved from allocated prices here, we require the minister and deputy minister to be here. Oh. But otherwise, it's very specifically a question. The reason was going to be originally was he was going to take us together with the commissioner to the strike plan. So, you know, but we note your words, Mr. Jason. And before I move on, I want to warmly welcome Pule Mabe. ANC believes in dialectics of the National Democratic Struggle, but we still committed to whatever people say, although the term is hard to use, he says, Pule. So I'm very old, and we have to balance it out by bringing a young, youth league baby. And so, ANC is a microcosm of all of us. So welcome to Pule Mabe. He's already had a huge impact on this committee, on his very first step. He contacted me at 9:05, but the meeting is at 9:30 or 10 o'clock. And so it is that he's made a huge impact because at the top of you have been here for half an hour and you've been very upset with me. So thank you, Mr. Mabe. That's been a privilege on your side. And we are now asking the DG to speak. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to Tandi in particular. Tandi, welcome. No, I know. Okay. Fine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I know that you know all of us, but I don't want to put this to a test. I suspect that you are seeing my brand new CFO for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
It was the release of me not being to Musa. Shalindile Kubane, she is coming back. She was with us when first was killed at the AG. She is back now. Qualified chartered accountant and all sorts of things. But we're glad to have her with us. But this is Mr. Mgomezulu, who you know. The second, the slide that marked number two, which is this one, it just summarizes in a couple of bullets what the Treasury does or is mandated to do. In a way, you will find this writing to tell the committee, no. So those are the things that undergird what we do. Then we summarize, try to demonstrate the alignment between what Treasury does and the medium term strategic framework. Now, we also indicate where it's possible the particular division within the National Treasury that is charged with that kind of work. This may be one of those tables that it is better to read from right to left, because you would see when you look at the extreme right column, right hand side column, where we set out what the NDP and MDFF goal is, that through certain strategic objectives that we set out in the middle and programs, we contribute towards the achievement thereof. First one, for an example, decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Part of what we do is to make sure that our government can fund all of its borrowing optimally, and by doing so, we can therefore enable our government to contribute towards growth and job creation. There is also an indirect connection between this, which is very opportune perhaps to mention, in the context where there has been a lot of talk about the need to preserve the investment grade rating for South Africa. It's very important that the way in which government borrows, the amount of money that it borrows, is such that we can still preserve our credit rating. We as government do not raise money in the economy in a manner that ends up pushing the cost of borrowing in the entirety of the economy. In other words, if, for instance, government were to expand activities, too much borrow too much, and as a consequence of that, loses its investment grade rating, it could create a situation where the cost of borrowing, for not only for government but for the entire economy, increases. When I say entire economy, businesses, households, and so on. So we have a division called asset and liability division that starts with managing that. Second, one of the other outcomes that another outcome that we contribute to is the creation of an efficient, effective, developmental-oriented public service. Now, definitely the issue that relates, for instance, supporting capacity development across the entire local state, and we will get into some of the details when we even answer the questions that I asked previously in relation to local government. Of course, in this particular area, we do or we run training programs. We have regulations that are aimed at ensuring that we have the right kind of people, better kinds of skills to do what is required to prosecute or advance financial management in our system. Of course, we don't have an exaggerated impression or appreciation of what we can do. If you include all staff at the Treasury, I think we have around 1,200 people. Now, that's all people, including those who don't have skills like me. So we've got nothing to offer other people. So, this is but we do the best with the resources that we have. And this falls under financial accounting and supply chain management, of course. So I don't want to really bore you, because this, a lot of this is a bit very, very simple. You can see the other outcomes that we contribute to. In some instances, the contribution is direct, in others, very direct, and still others, it's a mix of direct and indirect. We list them there. Now, what I would like to invite to request the committee chair, if you allow me to do, is to hop to a six-page document. Again, I'm not going to read it. But it is to demonstrate that we do follow the instruction or the direction that we get from the committee. In your opening remarks, you were indicating that you always ask us that we should start by answering the questions you had asked us previously. You will see on page one of that, that one of the issues that the committee had expressed concern about, rightly so, was the fact that several of the targets had not been achieved. Now, we had made, we have improved now way with the report that I will show later on the table. But what we had done previously was to select or show where it 100% achieved and then the rest was nothing. Now, even in very, very strict professions, it's not always 100% that's demanded for them to be suffering. What we've done, and the current report for the fourth quarter also shows this, is that we show in certain instances things that have, or targets that have been partially achieved, with some indication, no sound indication, of the degree of achievement thereof. So, but with that summary idea, is an indication of the fact that we incurred 96% of the expenditure, and we indicate that a number of what we had reflected then as not achieved were actually partially achieved items. Now, if you can move them to page two, we were asked about investigations, and we summarized there the status of those investigations. One investigation was not done internally, it was done by the Public Service Commission, and our role was to make that investigation possible by furnishing the Public Service Commission with all the information they needed to be able to arrive at the conclusion of that. We have given almost everything that they asked for. In fact, everything that they asked for. That process is in their hands. There was also another one that we were doing internally, which has been concluded. It was suggesting things that we said at the bottom of the table, that they were happening in relation to one of the employees of the treasury. And of course, the investigation that conducted suggested that, let me put it in the words used here, just to be sure, the investigation could not confirm the existence of the things that have been alleged. This tracks, by the way, to one of the programs we reflect on, and I've already talked about 5.3 at the bottom of page 2. Honourable members had correctly asked that we should play an active role and be able to report back to this committee on the role we're playing in helping build capacity in other parts of government, especially in municipalities. This is something we've been doing for a very long time. I mean, I remember over 10 years ago, we started with helping provinces. We set up the Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program, which was sending people to provinces with the kind of expertise required to help provinces deliver infrastructure better and more efficiently. Insofar as municipalities are concerned, we're running a program called Local Financial Management Improvement Program. The aim of this program is to assist municipalities that would ordinarily not be able to assess or even build on their own the kinds of technical skills in finance, accounting, and so on. So we do a couple of things with the indicated amount, for instance, is 1.5 billion that's allocated over the LTF for this kind of government to augment it. What we do is we hire experienced people qualified in these areas, proven records of capability, send them sometimes as long term expense deposits there. And at the same time, we give municipalities a grant that enables them to hire a young graduate from a technical university or whatever, and the experienced person then equips the younger one with the skills necessary to be able to do these things on their own long term. We do list them a whole lot of stuff. Of course, we have entered a new phase with that kind of program. The essence of this is to just illustrate, for instance, we do make the point on page 3 that at the 31st March 2016, which is the period for which we are reporting, this program was supporting, or part of it was supporting 50 municipalities with long-term advisors. But that's not where it ends. I think we call them interns, right? The interns are larger in number and in many municipalities. But what the approach we've taken in relation to supporting financial management in municipalities is that we recognize that it would be hard to do this efficaciously from Victoria. So we've encouraged provincial journalists, and all of them have done this, with varying degrees of success, but many of them, if not all of them, have succeeded in this. We've encouraged them to set up units within themselves so that they can do similar initiatives like the ones we're doing with the 17 municipalities that we call not delegated. 17 large ones are reporting directly to us, capacity support for them is with us, oversight of their budgeting and so on is with us. But the others are delegated, so to speak, to the provinces. So our role then in that case becomes one of assisting the provinces strengthen their own capacity to support the municipalities. So we do that. So we list them. If you go to page 4, in response to yet another very important question about the SOEs, the committee would know that government has internalized a lot of this and elevated it. Has a committee that's chaired by the deputy president. He has answered several questions in the National Assembly, actually, in relation to the work that's being done to strengthen SOEs, make sure that they are financially stronger and can play a much more meaningful role in driving the development agenda of government. Transformation, compliance, you will see what we summarize there at the bottom, and of course it does not take into account that we have replaced the former CFO who was a man by a very competent woman who's sitting here to prove the point. As you can see on the next page. So, honorable chair and committee members, this then 6 pages does exactly what you asked to do. If there are any inadequacies in that regard, we will be happy to respond. Chair, I know you may be worried because I promised you I was going to be brief. And you see that I'm only on slide 6, I am going to be brief. We summarize them on this slide in a way that demonstrates how in numbers what I was saying in went, which is that we now have got a category that lists the service delivery targets that have been achieved fully, those that have been partially achieved, versus those that have not been achieved at all. And of course we have got a column which has got zeros, we would have even hidden it at the top. And we set up a total one. Then we show the percentage achievement. There is then, as there are several lines which begin to talk to final details that I suspect if I were to take you to, I could, we were two versions of this. We were debating it with my employer here, Mr. Moromes, who is the head of corporate services, how much we should show you. I said, you see, the best thing is to have, let's bring everything, in case we're asked. We can prove that we have results. But I will stay in the pain. Unless we see, which is, I will show you this summary,
Because we can take you then through indicator indicator and we show it on the ATP. Even this one, which is not so strong, is an abuse. It happens about 40% of the indicators. But we have indication for an appetite for the competitive. We've got the long one and I can just hop to it and take you to it. But I've looked at the face of the chair. It seems like he might toss me out of here if I were to do that to his condition. But we do set here, you can see if you look, we're starting the second one, which is calling an administration, in particular ICP, says, you know, we would want to make sure that the strategic alignment of business and ICT, and of course the solutions work and are deployed with sort of 95% compliance of the service level agreement. We indicate what has been achieved, we also indicate where the difficulties have been. That's the pattern that is kind of what the follows. That's kind of the thing, but may not help you too much. Let me jump now to some of what is very important in terms of the money. These are the programs and adjusted budgets. We show then the environment and shifts and what the final budget then looks like. Of course, the shifts are within, and therefore the totals between the adjusted budget column and the final budget will be the same, but of course with some variations in terms of the actual amount for specific programs. For instance, some programs like financial systems and accounting dropping a bit in here, and therefore the amount will be different in the final budget. Then we show the actual outcome, which I think is pre-audited. Pre-audited actual outcome was 28.690 billion, and of course the variance between the final budget and the actual outcome, and we show you the percentage. 98.9% of the budget was spent. We then go on to explain the areas where there were significant variations between the final adjusted budget and the actual expenditure. That's 314 million. The bulk of it, 238 million, was in transfers. And a bigger proportion of it, 225 million, was the Employment Creation Facilitation Fund. That is where the Jobs Fund is. Part of the difficulty with the Jobs Fund is that it is one of those kinds of funds where as much as we would like to spend all of, like in any book, so that the intended job objectives are achieved fully, but it entails a lot of compliance. Honorable members will recall, part of what the fund does is to ask the private sector parties to bring in their own contribution. It can be a maximum of 50%, in other words, rent for rent, but it can calculate from the farmer, depending on what is proposed and how government feels about it in terms of the criteria that are set up. Now, often then, when people apply and when they signal the likely drawdowns over time, they are very optimistic. It is an understandable thing. They think that they can turn up the end of it faster or whatever initiative. They can employ more people. They can be able themselves to raise more money. And then you start. Once you start, then the reality is different from what people were imagining before them, which is not a problem, it's not a crime. Because the kind of a thing, the way we look at it, is that government made a commitment that over time, it will expend 9 billion, hopefully crowd in possibly a maximum of another 9 billion. It could be more, it could be less, from the private sector. So what we then do is when the private sector parties are struggling to comply fully, we hold back the transfer and revise the rate at which the drawdowns are made. And this is what has given rise in the main to this shortfall. Some of it has already been asked for as a rollover for the next financial year. 23.4 million
of the Amsmith fund was withheld and then to municipalities for one reason or the other in relation to what they were supposed to comply with. So we conclude, I mean, I'm very proud to show that we also saved cumulatively 20.2 million. In other words, what this means is within the department, because we were very mindful of the need to curtail spending, so things that we were anticipating using research history to spend more on, we were able to negotiate better prices, better discounts, and the total savings on that is 20.2 million. That's the sum of the items there, Honorable Chair. Then we show here that debt service costs were higher than projected. It is an understandable thing because they are an estimate, the debt service costs. I mean, interest rates fluctuate during the course of the year, up and down. There are years where we showed that our projections for debt service costs fell short of the actual budget. In this instance, they have run over quite a bit. Now, because interest rates went up a bit last year, especially toward the in the latter part of the year, we even have a graph, I think, in chapter 1 or 3 of the budget review where we show how the spread on our typical 10-year bond went up towards the end of the year. They came down again, but never really went back to the level at which they were previously. When you see in the newspapers, or yesterday, for instance, the yield on our 10-year bond went up to 9.33%. Now, when that happens at the time when we're raising the money, that means that the cost of borrowing goes up. Of course, people are not discussing over this. It's a direct charge we just have to pay when it arises. Similarly, you can see the treasury bill rate, which tends to track the repo rate, also went up a bit. Now that the repo rate is at 11%, we can expect to pay a little bit more. Okay. On that note, I thank you very much.
Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, it is my honor and pleasure to introduce the chief of the company this morning. I'm accompanied to my left by the chief officer, Bate Business and Individual Taxes, Mr. Jones Makwako. And on the third row, he is accompanied by Mr. Sangani Matebula, with the Chief Officer for Strategy, Communication and Enforcement. He's from the Reserve Bank in Provincial Unit. And I have on the other side next to him is Mr. Devon Mokwena, who is the Chief Officer of Human Capital and Development. And at the back I have Mr. Jack Mikletos, Chief Officer for CAT. Customs and Excise Taxes. So there's a lot of acronyms in SAS. And then of course we have Mr. Marius Vandenfus, who is the GE for strategy. purpose in my presentation chart. I'll try and follow perhaps surpass the time spent by Gigi, hopefully so. But ours is to do the presentation for the fourth quarter, from January 2016 to March 2016. Chairperson, would like to share with this committee a very profound, good, and a great story. A story that we as South Africans and the SARS community is proud of. I'm saying this, Chairperson, the achievement of the 1 trillion and 69 billion was not a mean fix, but it's a process that is underpinned by a hard work and collective wisdom. We say so because the 1 trillion is a story that brings to us optimism and hope to all South Africans. This historical achievement, besides the difficult headwinds and economic problems that we had in the country and across the world, was a result of some of the issues that I want to put up front as House Bill. One, when we came to this committee last year, there were issues that we wanted to put to yourselves, the operating model. The operating model is a response to the commitment made to Parliament in our 2014-2015 APP, page 27. This is the document. It came out of this document and we got your mandate. The operating model sought to establish a strong government of our core mandate and strengthening governance measures to ensure effective and efficient collection of all revenue due. The operating model was socialized to all various stakeholders, including this committee. The outcome of this discussion with yourselves received support and approval for its effective implementation. Furthermore, the very operating model that we're speaking about was approved by Minister Nene in 2015 in August. It was also brought into the attention of other stakeholders, like the SARS Board, Organized Labour, Davis Commission, which gave us a thumbs up. But most importantly, the appreciation came from the 15,000 men and women of SARS who saw the dawn of change and implementation of transformation SARS. How did we achieve the trillion? It was decided because of a meticulous planning and forecasting that we took into account. Just because we put strong leadership and focus on activities that we're supposed to put together, and most importantly, hands-on management approach. Chairperson and members of the committee, we visited as an entire EXCO, 30 centers across the country, because our mandate is the effective collection of all the EU. We went to all provinces of the Republic of South Africa to galvanize our people in order to meet this stretch target. It was underpinned by the fact that leadership sitting in their offices will not be able to understand the problems that are felt by our officers on the ground. And therefore it was important for us to be able to have that outreach being put into practice. For us also to achieve this important milestone in history, we had what you call the GE Executive Revenue Forum, which looked into special initiatives. These initiatives were not the normal money that people would come and collect and put into SARS, but these were other initiatives which we needed to deal with. And these are outstanding returns, people not paying their taxes on time, and they made collection. Chairperson, we also leverage our capabilities, putting in place collective resources and partnership, one of which is effective technology that has enabled us in line for facing workforce. We also automated our risk engines and data matching across all tax types. And of course, synergy from that coalition efforts that we put in place to lower our people. And then of course, what is key is that the Lebanon coalition is about partnership with all stakeholders who are supposed to play the strategic changes. I just want Chairperson to clear one particular matter, so that when it comes, we're able to deal with it in the manner that this committee is able to have a clear understanding. There have been an erroneous perception and narrative that we have disbanded the large business center. Chairperson, before the committee and everybody present here, this is completely untrue. And if I may take it further, it's a figment of the imagination of those who want to sustain a narrative of anti-transportation agenda. The LBC has not been dismantled, but it is important for us to give you a historical development of the LBC. In 1994, this particular unit was known as a College Income Tax Assessment Center. It evolved in October 1996 to become officially launched in Sandton office for large corporates. And in 2000, that the mine tax included in the large corporate center was included in this unit. And in 2004, that business office was established. But the turning point in the history of the large business center was in 2007, when it was introduced as a relationship management between big business and high net worth individuals. So you should be able to track all the revenue due by the sectors that make more impetus into an economy. In 2009, focus on the transfer price, which became a target internationally, and therefore this unit was seized with that responsibility to address this matter. In 2015, when the operating model was approved, we therefore abstained the process, if you recall, Chairperson, that we are in the process of recruiting additional skills in order to deal with wage erosion and profit shifting, transfer pricing, and relationship enhancement. Perhaps if you may allow me, Chairperson, at this point in time, especially on the importance of the large business center, to indicate that in my recent visit a week ago to the People's Republic of China, where I participated and interacted with the Forum for Trade Administration on the 11th of the 2nd of this month, I, the Commission of SARS, was tasked to lead a panel which would deal with capacity building, precisely which feeds into the issues of the large business center. Because trade administrations across the world are seized with the problems that are facing the world in the base erosion and profit shifting, transfer pricing. It is in this region where developed countries committed to assist the developing countries in capacity building. And we also want to indicate to yourselves, because the importance of the large business center by its nature meant therefore that we needed to heighten the skills and the capabilities of this country in order to close the gap on Asian financial flows. And therefore it is inconceivable that we will be taking a reckless decision to close a sector of this nature that has an important to our organization. Chairperson, our mandate is very clear and unambiguous, but it is based on three levels to execute our mandate. First, we provide service. Secondly, we provide education to the taxpayer. But if all these two factors fail, the last result is enforcement, which we usually don't want to go there because it is important that taxpayers in a nation become combined with the tax regulations of this country. One of the highlights in the track to level collection, I will not bore you with a number of the items that are indicated in the slide, but suffice to indicate that in this quota itself that we are just reporting to, we collected 309.5 billion, which was the marginal surplus of 0.3 billion against the estimate. But we are proud indicators that there was an overall positive performance. Highlight thereof is that we see the higher domestic debt of 0.4 billion. But crucially, the customs duties of 3.5 having indicated that we have a new baby in the organization that is customs elevated to chief officer position has brought into the kit a 0.3 billion, which is 1.8, which was slightly higher due to higher import gains from exchange rates and the weakening of our currency. We also want to indicate that company income tax collection went up by 1.7 billion, which is 3.5% higher than the expectation, expected provision payments from small and medium enterprises. I want to get into operational issues, Chairperson, because of the time. Operational highlights, which is 5-6. The budgetary measure that we want to put here is that we interacted in the quarter that is January to March with 1.4 taxpayers through our branch network and mobile tax unit. We also made and received 1.1 million calls via national call center, 94% of which were queries which were resolved in the first contact. We also want to indicate that we successfully processed 301 voluntary disclosure applications, and we collected out of that initiative 444 million. We also conducted 885 investigative audits, 3,568 compliance audits, and this brought into the fiscal 922.7 million. So like any other tax administration in the world, we have filled what is called the debt book. We've done our age analysis, but in measure, the quarterly measure, the debt book was at 9.01% of revenue for quarter four, against 8%. Despite the 4.75 cash collected, 15.11 million of the total debt book was collected by the 31st of March. We're doing everything that is possible, Chairperson and the members of the committee, that the debt book is reduced to a manageable level. It is common knowledge to those who do finance and accounting that if your age analysis is such that the amount of money that is owed the organization is now 5 and 10 years, then it becomes not possible for you to collect. And therefore it is our duty as a tax authority that we do not have money that is uncollectible. While Chairperson on quarterly measure again, we have dealt with 2,420 dispute cases, which went through the dispute resolution process. Chairperson, for the key focus and initiatives that we have made, the pillars are the tax compliance, client information systems, and illicit economy. The three pillars I'll touch. The first tax compliance that we have established online tax compliance status, which was piloted in 2015 December. And the second phase thereof is and has been launched in the second quarter, and it is human results. And we want to compare with the DG of Treasury that all tax clearance certificate system that has been ongoing for years is coming to an end because there is an integration system which began in April 2016, where we'll be able to see who are compliant tax citizens, especially in terms of business. Therefore, we'll be dealing with fraudulent tax certificates once and forever. On tax information system, what we call civil registration, we've piloted a merger of tax and customs records of 1,100 taxpayers into a consolidated entity. And 82% of the selected taxpayers were met successfully. On the illicit economy, precisely because we have a customs and excise unit that is charged of collecting 20 to 30% of the revenue, we were proud to indicate that 25.9 million illegal cigarettes worth 22.1 million were seized in various costs of entry in this country. The total for a year is 134 million sticks. We are also proud to announce to ourselves that 15,892 clothing and textile items worth 2.9 million were seized, which would have affected our textile industry. But most importantly, on the narcotics side, 2.6 tons of narcotics were seized in ORT, Bainbridge, Lebombo, KZN at King Shaka, and Cape Town. And this was at a value of 69.2 million. In the same period, we impounded illicit cash of 13.15 million. But it is important that it is a small number that you see, but if we look at the total picture for the year, at Bima Tambo Regional, or Bima Tambo International Airport, in September, October of last year, we seized 97 million rands of money that was leaving the country. This is thanks to the scanners that we have installed in our course of entry. We also want to indicate progress on key initiatives. The new Customs Act program, we are in the process of implementing that. To underpin the success that I spoke about in my previous slide, this committee, which is a core criteria, we invited yourselves to accompany the officials of SARS in the inauguration and installation of a deployed mobile scanner in the bridge. And that has been done, and it is providing good results in this regard. We have also initiated the procurement of additional deck cargo scanners, mobile scanners, and 16 baggage scanners for both our airports as well as our terminals in the post offices. We also want to indicate yourself that the complaint management system is in process and it is aligned and reimbursed within the office of the tax ombuds. And meetings with the tax ombuds has given us an ability to be able to see the blind spots, side of which we argue with the complaints that the taxpayers are raising in relation to the relationship that they have with SARS. Chairperson and members of the committee, the Preferred Trade Fair Program, we want to indicate that we have assisted SACO member states to identify capacity building requirements and develop a web plan for implementation. But before I get into the next slide, I think it is important also to do a housekeeping matter with respect to the APB strategic plan, which you spoke about, Chairperson. But we as SARS, we submitted our APB strategic plan to the Ministry on the 6th of March, 2016, on time. The Minister coordinating with the SARS officials on the 23rd of March, to which they requested 10 changes. SARS is complying with, and we're proud to indicate that in the next 10 days, this matter shall be closed and finalized with the Minister, so that it shall be tabled to Parliament, because we cannot continue our strategic plan and the APD. Chairperson, I would not like to bore you with the next few slides from page 9, 10, 11, 12, but suffice to indicate that one of the key pillars, which is customs revenue collected, the target that was set of 60.2, we could not meet, slightly because of the drop of import debt due to the vehicle and the machinery imports that we could see in the economy. Secondly, what is key is that we have seen an increase in terms of cargo declaration types, which quantity and the target thereof was 11, and we have gone up to 12.34. And this is due to the aligned ratio as a result of increase of reference prices due to the increase in the rate of exchange. Let me get into another increase in tax compliance. Personal income tax compliance percentage has increased slightly, but very importantly, because of the times when we saw the shedding of jobs in the mining, the quarry, and that has an impact in terms of the income tax collection. That being the case, we have been in a position that to see that this obligation and pre-population of the VAT returns, there's been an improvement into that. The percentage of in-depth body coverage of registered taxpayers, both personal income tax, company income tax, VAT exercise and payers again, we have overachieved due to the age of the revenue overdrive that we did in the course of the last quarter, when management was visiting the various offices across the country. Chairperson, on the issue of average processing of time or CI returns, we said it should be less than one day, and it is such, due to the processes and capabilities that we have put in place, this overachievement is due to systems enhancement, and their assessments are almost real time. The percentage of grant refunds is an issue that we need to speak about. Chairperson, we are cognizant of the fact that taxpayers, it is their right to complain and raise issues about SARS not paying the VAT refunds so-called on time. So I want to put it on record to the committee and the members that VAT refunds have become a problem. Any tax authority anywhere in the world is seized with this problem. And therefore we've put systems in place. We do this in order to protect our fiscals. At no point has SARS withheld VAT refunds in order to jig up revenue collection. Where refunds are done and they have been appropriately investigated, we pay refunds within 10 to 15 seconds. And those that have not been paid, they have to go through a process. If a taxpayer has a refund of over $1 billion, for example, it's not automatic. We need to go through the system and see as to whether this is a correct figure or whether there is an error somewhere. So once you tell the community and the committee that we are not in any form or shape withholding that refund. But there has been cases that we share with the committee when we present our annual report. The pervasiveness and the amount of money and people have been arrested for VAT refund claims. Chairperson, the issue that we need to be upfront raising right flag with yourselves on the issue of employee engagement, issues of equity, issue of employment of gender in management, issues of employment equity with regards to disability. We do take cognizance, especially on equity on people with disability. That's a very difficult target. We're making our duty and our responsibility to recruit people with disability. And that remains our cardinal point as management. The target that was set in the quarter was 2.06, was sitting at 1.18, and this underperformance also is due to attrition in the same center and low recruitment rate. I need to indicate 10% that I am humbled by the DG of Treasury introducing in his team a gender-sensitive matter, the chief financial officer being a lady. It's a huge, huge achievement, and for which We are proud to associate ourselves with such a decision, DG. But the challenge with us, we need to talk about it and be open and frank about it. I'll sit with the voice of fire. And it is my honor, it is my belief, chairperson, as we have indicated to yourselves in committee last year, the process of change has not been completed. The three positions that have not been filled, and those are reserved exclusively for women. But in the mid and senior position, we have fulfilled the quota. With respect to mid and senior management, we can proudly and globally say we are meeting the target of equity in terms of gender sensitivity. Chairperson, with the permission and protection. The slide that is before is self-explanatory. And we believe that in the discourse of our discussions with yourselves, we'll be able to explain some of the phenomena. With respect to human resource, as we speak, SARS has a headcount of 14,198 employees towards the end of the quarter, which excludes all the vacancies. Overall, there has been an increase of 220 employees from April 2015 to March 2016. At the same time, SARS has recruited 189 new employees and lost at the same time 170. With admitted that on disability targets, that's the target we would like to achieve. I think it's a target that all departments are assist with and we try to outlive it. We have the slide that speaks about human resource. On the equity side of March, in total we have 10,000 with the target for March 2016, with the annual target was 72%, we sit as of March 74.25. With regards to females of grade between 6 and 9, we have out, we had an outstanding result in terms of the target that was set of 47.2, we had 48.5. And of course, on disability, that's a problem. Chairperson, without further ado, that's a short report I would like to give yourselves. But certainly, when we engage yourselves in the annual report, you will be able to provide meat and substance some of the issues that the committee would like us to delve into. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Sorry. This came out once again this morning, right? So, this reply. Commissioner, if you can just quickly take us through it. It's quite a few pages, just a midpoint. This goes from our BRRR. So it's the document that says recommendations, response, national police response to the budgetary review, blah, blah, blah. And then you take up the issues on SARS, right? The first question is, the committee recommended SARS release data at a future meeting on how exactly it's deciding its targets and so on. If you can just take us through that quickly, not fully, so that at least we cover the questions that we've raised before. Is that okay with the committee? This would normally do. Then I think there's a third question there. The tax agreement is South Africa, another country that draws out mostly the housing agreement seek to avoid debt. That's an important one, Commissioner, because next week we're having all of you here for the Panama Papers and illicit financial flows. So can you just take us through the document, in a quick 5 minute to 8 minute overview?
Thanks, Chairperson. With respect to the setting of the target, that is not decided by SARS. As indicated in the broader, a wide range of quantitative methods that are put in place, which goes into deriving fiscal revenue through the Ministry or National Treasury, targets, forecasts that are put together. And then, of course, the Collective on National Treasury will sit with such officials and look at the macroeconomic conditions of the country vis-à-vis the development of the economy, and the ministry will set the target. And such, in relation to that particular phenomenon, jointly there's what we call the revenue, joint revenue analysis working committee, comprising of National Treasury, the Reserve Bank, and ourselves, will deliberate on the different views from these institutions and also have a consensus as to what is that is realistic and SARS will be able to connect. So it's not SARS deciding on its own that this is what it would connect. It's a factor of various institutions looking at the macroeconomic conditions of the country, the conditions of the economy, and the minister's set target. And therefore, if you recall, Chairman, the members of the committee, that the minister on his budget speech will actually say we are revising the target. It is in relation to the conditions as they obtained at the time. And that was it is agreed upon SARS work towards that target. The 1069 target was set in the last budget statement by the minister, and now of course SARS had to work towards achieving that. It was revised from 1074 and then it was revised to 1069. So we have met that and achieved that. So that's the effect of hard work initiatives and also looking at other external factors that may help us to achieve the intended objective. But we sincerely believe that National Treasury, having looked at these figures, also our opinion that it's a target that is realistic for the SARS to be able to deal with. So it's not in the absence of collaboration with the three legs of the institutions that fall under the Minister of Finance. The second one, Chair, I was not sure which one you related to. IT governance. Chairperson, we take cognizance on the issues raised by the Auditor General. SARS is IT driven. And the IT protocols and governance are very key for an institution of this nature. What we have done in the first quarter of 2015, we as SARS appointed an internationally renowned organization called Gartner to carry out an assessment of our IT environment. Firstly, to look into our IT strategy, to look into architecture and technology, social governance, application development and project management, and of course modernization. And with regard to IT strategy review, Gartner was of the opinion that the second phase named the ministry also and renew our capability. Because if SARS remains behind in terms of the technology that is being applied internationally, especially if we benchmark ourselves with similar organizations in the world, we'll have a serious problem. And there was SARS needed to align itself with industry frameworks, such as information technology, infrastructure library, and also with COVID. But in parallel to about SARS established a digital technology and management committee to govern IT-related matters, such as adoption of the new standards, technology investment decisions, and technology-related projects. Because for too long, these were given to one single entity without governance being at the center of what we needed to do. But we need also to indicate that with the establishment of the DTMC, SARS in a position to clearly indicate that our strategic plan and all processes that are IT-related are aligned to the revenue collection. On the issue of BEPS, base erosion and profit shifting, it's a very topical matter. I'll let you indicate that this matter has been noted and in future presentation we'll be able to provide a committee as with the number of double taxation agreements that were signed with various administrations across the world. But what is key on the tax matter, we see foreign companies are still in the extractive industry, in the developing economies, are shifting billions of rands of dollars out of the economies of those countries. And we as SARS have taken a conscious decision that will upgrade and upscale and have capacity building entrenched into this sector. We can say here, so without contradicting to ourselves, that it is a matter that we are discussing and which we discussed when we called last in October, when I called a meeting with the Commissioner General of South Africa to come and discuss the best vision, which affects the neighboring countries and ourselves, which also hinges on what is called initial financial flows. So it's a matter that is ongoing, wherein we do not have a silver bullet that says this is what we are going to do. It's a collective decision in the region and ourselves as a collective decision to have skills that are within the organization to deal with this matter effectively. So it's work in progress, but certainly we have given sharp attention. We participate in the OECD, we participate in various international fora where our people and our experts are participating in providing leadership on this sector.
I think you've covered a lot of this already in your current input, so members are free to ask questions. Vicky?
Maybe through your banners, are we doing workshops in Treasury or...
Which is we take both reports together,
yeah.
And they want to respond to issues you raised previously on that we are already.
Okay.
So all the commission is doing is responding to our 23rd of October report.
Yes.
Right? And the members can put questions based on the past. I'm saying the fourth question, in a large sense, you implicit by what you said, Jay. Unless you want to add something. Yes, what are you going?
Chairperson, there's something that's certainly my apologies, you spoke about the PNA. You were the PNA, Master? Am I right? Yes.
No, I'm saying everything about the governance structures.
Now, in a way, the question was posed last October, what you said is covered there. So I would suggest, unless members feel otherwise, that we skip over to question 5, which is on page, what page is it? It's on page 9. Where we ask you, what is the BMA? That's right, you are in fact right, sir. Sorry, Commissioner. That's the next question. I apologize, yeah. That is the next question, BMA.
Chairperson, a very difficult response to this matter. How late needs to respond to? This matter was discussed with this committee. It's a matter that when I joined this organization's Commissioner for SARS was an ongoing process. Having familiarized myself with the matter, I had a discussion with the former minister, Nene, together with the DM. We had an extensive discussion on this matter, and we had an extensive discussion with yourselves. The position that SARS has on this matter is that it's not against the PNA. I think that's one that we need to be able to put very clearly. What SARS is looking for is a collaborative approach. Because the manner in which the PNA is sought seeks to balkanize SARS and break it apart, seed some of the functions that are within the purview of SARS of revenue collection. And it is this committee, therefore, that has made a commitment to support the position of SARS, that there is no need for the fragmentation of SARS with respect to the revenue and the mandate for which we have been established. This matter, our minister is going to have a discussion with the Minister of Home Affairs, to have a discussion as to how this matter needs to be taken forward. Perhaps the DG being here, representing National Treasury, because they've been called to headline in our forum for the discussion. But certainly from a SARS perspective, we ask for a collaborative approach where in SARS maintain the level, high level ground in terms of the money for which it has been established, the revenue collection that is due to the fiscus. We need also to remind the county that customs is responsible for about 20% of the revenue that collect. And therefore, if figures are what we have to do, is that if you take the 1 trillion that we have successfully brought here and reduce it by 20%, we would not have been able to achieve that. Certainly would have been a different number that we needed to be reporting to. But I'd like also to indicate to the committee that SARS are not included as part of the government's constituency in these funding consultations, and therefore we are not in a position to comment on the devaluations that have taken place. But we have put on records to your staff, to the minister, to the board, as to how we'd like to see the process unfold. Certainly ours is to avoid the fragmentation and the balkanization of SARS, and seeking the power that we have. What it means, therefore, is that the matter, all the functions that we have with respect to customs will have to be ceded to the new administration that will take over. That's our position, and that's official. All I can say is the DG may add a word or two on this, because it's not a science matter, it's a ministry matter, but National Treasury may have a voice to explain further in regards to this matter. Thank you.
There wouldn't be much to add. The issue, as the commissioner is strenuously trying to explain, is making sure that when we deal with what seems to be security concerns, we don't then create a problem of eroding the customs store revenue capacity that SARS have over years built up. So it's not even a ministry issue. It is a government issue. The rest of government has got to look at the matter and find the right balance between making sure that the gaps that existed, which gave rise to the good idea of a border management agency, should not then all of a sudden inadvertently dump what is a very important institution which plays a very vital role in ensuring that the movement of goods and things is monitored carefully, and to the extent that customs are going to be paid for this stuff, you know, all of that has got to be done. So the approach then, both legislatively, institutionally, and in practice beyond this point, has got to show a balance. And I sense in the conversations that I've had with my counterparts in government that there is an appreciation of this need to find the right balance. Because often with these things, is that what happens that when people have moved too far, blindsided or something, and then when they are shown, it takes a little while to go back to the drawing board and reconsider the points, but I think we'll find the right equilibrium.
Chairperson, with respect to questions, if the committee comes to comments, I'll explain more convincingly. Details in his quarterly reports to the committee, how it decides on what share of revenue to raise from each of the source of tax. The response is long, but certainly if you look into the response that we've given, that our forecasting and analysis are based on macroeconomic time series, model trend analysis, and statistical modeling. But that being the case, what we do is that we look at what is called gross operating surplus, remuneration, trade flows, consumption trends, and these indicator accounts for most of the underlying tax bases and flows. But if we flip and look at the various the estimate that we have indicated here. What we have done is that we looked at the final household consumptions, the value thereof, we looked at the exports, we looked into the imports, and then we looked at the GDP ratio to inflation, and then of course we then look at the total revenue that is due to the fiscal, and then of course government in the National Treasury will be able to dissect the total revenue that is collected and be able to apportion it to various government departments according to the needs of the state in terms of the domestic investment. So we don't take part in terms of where the money must go, but it's gone back into the revenue fund for its distribution. Thanks.
Proposal. Shouldn't we first look at National Treasury and then SWAP, or do you want to give both at the same time? What's the feeling? Go to the vote. Alright, fine. Go to the vote. I'm cool. Whatever. Go for it then, Vicky.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few comments on the presentation by the DG. I think my input, Chair, as I welcome the quarterly report from National Treasury, to say to the DG, maybe going forward, we would want to have a column that deals with impact. If you look at the kind of capacity building that you spoke about to local municipalities, the support that you are giving to local municipalities and provincial treasuries and whatever, through whatever programs, whether IDIP or everything that you have also said. On the flip side, there are also slides that say certain things could not be spent because of incapacity and all this. So some of these things negate each other. So going forward, we wouldn't want to see situations where municipalities surrender money because of incapacity to spend. And I'll also give another example. If you look at the neighborhood grants, which you have also shown in your slide, the significant variances. Neighborhood grants also assist in those urban regeneration things, programs or whatever. I come from a very small town, Bilabila, and it's one of those towns that should benefit out of a program like neighborhood grants, so that they deal with urban sprawl and all those things and so on and so on. It's a very good program. But if municipalities are unable to access this, surely because of incapacity to apply or to get access or whatever, it becomes a problem and it defeats the good intentions that Treasury had. And we know what that means to aging towns, you know, those old towns of Fentendorf or any other town that we can look of. And we wanted those kinds of things. And we know what the impact would be if that was supposed to be spent. The other issue is on the jobs fund. Noble idea, good intention. Many people are unemployed, but still there's incapacity to spend. We once went to the unit, the jobs fund unit, and their programs were very good, but it defeats the whole thing if there is no spending around some of the things, given the pressure that we find ourselves in and the economic situation that we find ourselves in. So I think the important thing, DG, going forward, is the impact of some of these programs that National Treasury has developed to make sure that that happens. And I must say, your program with the Chief Financial Officer, I mean, we met in the street, it's going to turn things around and change how government has been doing business. And I think some of the things will improve for the better. And now we have to step up and move on to impact and make sure that things happen accordingly. Chair, that's how far I've gone in as far as Treasury is concerned. Can I go into the house? Yes. Okay, thank you. let me, Chair, I think it is important as the committee to really commend the Commissioner of SARS and the SARS team for exceeding their targets, the 1 trillion targets which they have achieved, something that never happened in the history of South Africa. But we should also, Chair, remind ourselves as this commissioner to remember when Mr. Mayan started, there were blows all over, people thinking that because African, you will start, you will collapse, you know, those are the things that we were confronted with as the committee, and I think in self-control. So there were, of course, a lot of doubting Thomases, and that continued to happen. And I think when this announcement came upon to you, Mr. Moyam, something that we will want you to tell the committee, because the doubting Thomases are still there. One of the things that they were saying is that you achieved this 1 trillion because you withheld certain payments and then so that you can be able to say this is how much you were able to collect. And I think you should also take a little confidence about that. That you didn't rob Peter to pay Paul and then want to be smart and tell people that you have achieved this when you did not achieve. I think it has been all over, but we must formally now raise it with you as the committee so that we are sure of what we're saying. Of course, the operating model, Commissioner, which we were privy to as a committee, one of the things I must raise as a member of this committee, that I didn't think that when we okayed that model, it was going to also undermine the issue of transformation. We can't have a voice fire. You fill all those depots, and then you start to say, now I'm going to look for me. It's a thing. And I don't think that's what we that what transformation is all about. You can't tell us as a committee that you were not able to even get women inside the system, that you can also take to those levels and then be able to put systems in place to incubate and all those things. I mean, we've been to your site in KZN and in Cape Town where women of staff are in charge. So that excuse to me, I don't want to say I don't take it, but I'm disappointed. That's what I must say. The other issue, Chair, I think it will be important going forward that as a committee we also meet with the tax ombudsman just to hear the issues and familiarize ourselves with what members of our citizens are saying about some of the things that they may not be happy with regard to SARS. It's a proposal I'm just putting to the committee. On that, Comrade Chairperson, I think during our debate, and unfortunately one could not finish that because the Davis Tax Committee has also assessed the kind of law that South Africa has around debt. But I want to hear from SARS, given their participation in the global arena, whether they are still debt or do we need to put other systems in the form of legal framework to assist you to tighten the screws around debt. Because EFF was very vocal to say there are no laws, there are no laws. But we know the Davis Tax Commission also went through our legal system, and the report speaks about some of those things. And maybe let's hear from you and Treasurer to say maybe there are other issues or areas where we need to tighten. There is the challenges in our borders, Chair. I think SARS is more upset, for lack of a better word, about cigarettes and whatever. We don't hear anything about gold. There's a lot of gold from from Bedbridge. You know how in Bedbridge they are Muslim? It's legal. The watches, the second-hand cars, huh? We see them in Messina. How they deal with that, and how you, your church official are able to identify some of those things and be able to say, this is how porous our borders are, and this is how we are able to jump on some of those things. So, so that we're not only looking at your cigarette and whatever, but there are other, many bigger things that are coming through the border, where you guys, whether you have even disposal capacity of those watches, the cars, and the minerals, and other related things. The last thing, okay, BCOCC, stroke DMA. I hear what the commissioner is saying about fighting for death between Home Affairs and SARS. And I think we will be very disappointed if the customs unit goes elsewhere, because now we'll be crippling ourselves in as far as some of the service delivery issues are concerned. But the biggest challenge, and this is where we wanted SARS to start to talk to us about, when I flew with the chairperson to London and the team, they ask you which hotel, how many days, and I know when those days expire, they are able to check and say, Pinky and Eunice have left, they have gone back to South Africa. We must have that capacity. We must have that capacity of tracking people who come. So this OCC or your border management agency or whatever systems that you want to put must be able to do that. That's why people pass to Great Britain and say, I'm going shopping in Mustina, I'm coming back. And it goes forever and starts to put a Mukuku there and it becomes a problem. I'm not being xenophobic, but I'm just saying the impression that was given at the border was to say, I'm coming through, just to buy and go back. So we must have that tracking system so that we're able to see where did these people go. The last issue is around your modernization unit. The one in Brooklyn. In the same way I'm treating the issue of gender there, that's really why it's unique of yours. You must deal with it and make sure that it's transformed as well. Because you can't have that kind of a situation. Thank you, Commissioner.
You ready? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to Commissioner and DG for the presentation. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you. I'll start with National Treasury, DG, if I may. The question of revenue estimates for the current year, you haven't dealt with those. Are you able to give us some indication of what those are looking like as compared with the budget? And I think we've asked before about the question of the cost containment measures. I know you've dealt with your own, the National Treasury achievement there, but the detailed achievements by department, what are they? Are they achieving what we expect of them? And then, DG, what is National Treasury looking at in terms of the growth prospects for the current year, given the turmoil that now surrounds us in many ways? What are the growth prospects? What is National Treasury looking at in terms of the exchange rate? We've seen the rand lose value in the last few days. What are we expecting as we go forward into this year? DG, you glossed over the question of non-core assets. You didn't mention it in your report, but has been quite a lot of time, probably close to a year, maybe not quite. Anyway, it's been a long time since this aspect was announced. Surely by now we've done some work on identifying some of these core aspects, core, non-core assets, and whether they are going to be dispersed. Just some kind of progress report, please, DG. Yeah, that's it for you, DG. And then, Commissioner, right, let me start by saying that I'm afraid my experience, as limited as it is that VAT refunds are not happening the way it used to be. I've had to deal with a handful of taxpayers over the last 6 months who really have been close to bankruptcy because of this, and ultimately they were paid the refunds, not that there was any fraud or anything else. And so, may I then ask you, you are saying that you didn't deliberately hold back on refunds to achieve the outcome in terms of revenue. I accept that, no problem with that. But what was the extent of unpaid refunds at the end of the financial year that might have been paid had there not been delays? Commissioner, I think the customs and border thing is an issue which has been much talked about, but let me just say that I think SARS does a fantastic job there, and so I have nothing negative to say about that. However, let me just ask a question, and I hope that the answer will confirm my confidence in SARS. When the Gupta airplane left on the 7th of April, did it pass through all the required border controls? And if it did, was it clear, or were there any, I mean, the narrative is there was a huge amount of cash that was taken out. So if you could just let us know about that. Commissioner, it's really a very sad situation. And I don't want to dwell on the situation itself, but it's having a huge, I believe, and I think many of us believe, impacts on our country and the country's economy, is the relationship between yourself and the minister. Now, in March, the president said he was going to personally intervene, and I'm wondering whether that intervention has taken place and whether any progress has been made on this, because both you and the minister are highly respected people. In our administration have an incredibly important role to play. And I think all of us are keen that the relations should be good and the impact on the economy then goes away. The question of the operating model, much has been said about it. And so I won't go into the history. All I would like to know from you, Commissioner, is where are we in the implementation? And what are the costs that have been incurred and will still be incurred? So it has to be high-level figures because obviously you don't carry an analysis like that around with you. But just where are we with this model? Has it nearing completion? When will it be completed? And what are the kind of high-level costs associated with it? My last question, I think, you'll guess what my last one will be. I have no doubt. It was probably the first question I asked you when I came back. I'll just be repeated. So just think about which one it is. You'll probably give me the answer before I ask the question. Commissioner, the second to last question, announcement question, is what progress has been made with the court action involving the Hong CP case, which has been going on for a long time now? Has it been resolved? What was the outcome? How much tax was collected, if any, on that one? And then to the last question, do you have any idea where we'll see the KPMG report? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
behind that number, and we're a million. The top each other so they get confused. It's a small point. My biggest issue is, as an accountant, I like measuring things. And no matter what statistics the box might bring out, or what detail I might bring out, all pretty much is what you report on accuracy. And when it comes to economic transformation, if class in a position to give a proper report, so we can see since they had 94 to date, how the economy has transformed. So we can always set minimal measurements, because everything's in the air. Everybody wants to see transformation. If you just look at your page 16, the substantial transformation itself in the employees, for instance. But how has it changed in the taxpayer base? You know, and not just when it comes to gender and to race, but also when it comes to the size of entities. Because it seems to be commonly accepted we need to build our micro-economies and small business. So what percentage of this corporate income tax is coming from smaller employees, etc.? So is it possible in the future to try and stratify data so we can actually get some meaningful trends and see where we've fallen short in coming to the board? And personally, you know, I've been a tax practitioner for 25 years. The SARS today is 200% better than the SARS 25 years ago. So and you're doing a lot right. But I have to tell you that somebody's lying to someone when they think that they can pay a little bit in 36 days. It's just one, that's just not the case. And at what point is still the point? Must we take the issue up with the tax ombudsman to court? I can give you a few examples of simple property transactions where more than a year and a half has passed, internal audits have been done, and still the monster duty has not been refunded to a simple commercial enterprise, for instance. So there's definitely, when it comes to that, and I'm the fraud examiner, I understand the fraud that happens on VAT, etc. But the bottom line is it's a big issue for small businesses. Actually, it's a big business for anybody. Cash flow is king. So we need to have some guidelines into the public of 30 days or 40 days or whatever. You need to do the following report to the ombudsman or something, because definitely this is not the case in my experience. And it comes to simplification of registration. Have you tried to register a company for that? And I would like to ask you, what is the norm? Is it meant to be 30 days? And are you prepared to put that to a challenge anonymously, which is that the fee is offered with a few bad applications in, and we'll see how long it actually takes to do. Simple VAT and POI application just to start a small business. How long is it meant to take, and is there a way to get this to happen faster going forward? Tax clearance process much better now, but when there's a problem, there's a problem. A listed company, I know, took 2 years to get tax clearance sorted out, purely on the basis that a bank input was disallowed. It took 2 years and three big accountants to get that issue sorted out before. So there has been improvement. Imagine that's a very good thing. I think that's all I'm going to ask after the time.
Without any ingredients, I just want to thank you for the way you raise your questions. All of them are robust. They're very good questions. I like the way the two of you are raising them. But I'm not implying anything about anybody else. You can throw whatever conclusion you want. No, this is very good. There's no problem. It's very good questions. Most of them, if the chair was a good chair, unlike me, you would raise them anyway. So I want to thank you for the way you're raising questions. This is unusual. This is not that. Normally we get racially polarized. Right? No. This is a civilized, decent way. Yeah. Of raising questions. This is the way. Instead of, you know, racially polarizing, committee, drama, you know, and then the issues get lost. Very good. Very robust. I want to congratulate you on the robustness of your questions. They're no less robust than the manner in which we ask them. Right. I'm sorry to disappoint you, there's no fireworks yesterday. Right? So it's pretty straightforward, like a committee should function. Thank you. And the way I've known it to function since at least 1994. Right, over to you, Mr. Mali.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Kekana has covered a larger part of some of the things that one would have wanted to go into. But it's ready to. relate to the treasure, you have to understand, especially on capacity building. I mean, you spoke about the kind of capacity that we are trying to assist with the finances. So now, as the business, what appears to be feeding into the notion of corruption is mostly non-compliance, especially when dealing with the municipalities. Them not adhering to their own processes and all of that, you know, and at times that contributes to the sort of fines that they get. So it is important to try and understand that in your own evaluation process of this thing, the sort of outcomes that you are seeing, are they beginning to feed into how these municipalities are projected? Because coming from the house that I come from, you find that quite often when a narrative is being pulled out there to undermine the work of municipalities, more is set on their level of spending, them not following their processes, and all of that. And because we are now going into local government elections, that's why it's again going to be of great interest. It is going to be used all over, you know, sometimes to feed into whatever propaganda stunt that different political parties may be wanting to take as part of their own electioneering program. So, I'm not saying the treasury should be seen to be campaigning for a specific political party, but it is important that where strides are made, such as it was say, for instance, the Palabra municipality, because of incapacity over the past 2 years, their own support was sitting there. But with the intervention of the treasury, we have started to see this kind of progress. They've increased how much they spend, their money, they are able to meet their own IDP targets and all of that. Because this story has got to be told at some point. But if it's not told, people don't tend to believe that we are making the kind of progress needed to change how we are being perceived. Second one is on the lost funds. You see, I'm passionate about any effort and program that seeks to create loss. Because I do not believe that we should still go to our villages and townships and leave our people in the dust. You know, in the past when we're growing up, there will be some witches coming to deliver books at the library. And the whole week you are taught how to sing about this ABC Foundation, how this is to sing about this institution. When they come, the best thing you do is to sing for the dust and chase after cars. I don't think that should be the case when we are in democracy like we are now. You know, so it's important that if we have got the jobs fund, and if we have got, you see, DG, we are really identifying strikes, and the strike we're identifying is that year on year out, we are in rollovers. It could be that the process was set out to disperse the jobs fund. It's quite onerous. Now, have you ever looked at the policy review of sorts? Because if you are sitting with the money that you are unable to spend and having to roll them over, it means that the kind of policy framework that is associated with how much money should be dispersed could be onerous. So a bit of flexibility is required, especially on, you know, such an important subject as a fund that must help people of Palabra time. You know, because the creation of jobs gives people Christmas. You know, it gives them hope. It fulfills all the things that we have for our electorate. You know, so we it cannot be, it can't continue to be a same situation over and over again. We now need a context. You see, it can't just be noticed that no, the job fund is going there, we're only moving over. No. If policy, if the kind of policy we have is a problem, let's try to investigate possibilities of the review. And then maybe going to SARS. There have been issues that the committee has spoke to. We now relate to an integrated checks of vendor clearance system. You know, not necessarily vendors from them, but the vendor in terms of those who trade.
sake. So it's important that we let's say what has been done then, to make sure that we push this greater understanding amongst our people. You see, we do a lot of things. My question here is a doctor, she has got a PhD. But like many other people who grew up with me, she didn't know what is STD, what is a set-top-box. And I was just about telling her that my set-top-box is a decoder you said, oh. So it is not given that the sort of interventions you make are understood by the people. So because, you spoke about three things there when you try to apply what is the mandate of trust. There's service, there's education, there's enforcement. So now, to avoid always appearing like a police station, it's important that the education and service component are also reinforced. Because if you don't, every time you talk about trust, you scare the hell out of our people. Because they understand trust to only doing the third of their mandate, which is enforcement. Because why? We don't seem to be spending a lot of time educating our people. You see, you know that we are rolling out a new thing, the disease integration. Talk about those things. When you talk about them, you also contribute towards dealing with this in that African leadership, especially for bank trends, can be trusted. I mean, we are finding right because there's African leadership like yourself of bank trends. So now, when you do some of these things, which are seeking to change the mindset of our people, they should also be feeding. When you run in a big economy like ours, consciousness, I really see that consciousness is a big thing. So you need to make sure that you feed those things to also inspire confidence. These things are not just known by, they must not just known by SARS and Fred. Because again, they are going to look like some scared techniques where our people look at them. Because we do good things. But the small enterprise there, when they look at them, they tend to conclude that these things are meant to push them away from participating in some of these spin-offs that come with the same supply chain or procurement. So you need to make sure that they understand that we are creating these things so that the businesses would be sustainable, but to also help them contribute to a growing economy. And lastly, on the question of gender. I don't think you see there on gender, then we can't compromise there. You see, there must be a clear program on what you guys are doing at SLAS to make sure that we achieve gender parity. And maybe the president which overlooks at the web of SLAS, there must be a target. There should be a target attached there. That even now, and they agreed on, we should be able to see at least 50% gender parity at the level of senior management. Because this is an important political agenda to change tables and assure the people of South Africa that the things that we say, I mean, even whether it's parliament, at least the party is represented, and for the 50-50 policy, and I'm sure that we could be learning from some of those best practices and make sure that even within your institution something achieved. But overall, I think that we must commend Charles for the spanning work that you and your team are doing. And I think that more of this story must be told out there in the market. Our people must be knowing more about this, some of these stunning achievements, about the kind of cigarette you have the difficulties that we faced, which were coming into the country. They have all of those things. I will put there, Chair.
Makosi. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think Honorable Bule and have spread the mouthful. However, there are areas that I would like to reflect on. From speaking from Chair to more on a good note, I come not a Christian treasury, but I am a chairman and head of company. You know, I've been reflecting on my role and impact as a big venture. Okay, I'm a big venture. But, there's a view that says people like ourselves probably are not critical enough of what is happening, you know? And I was suddenly reminded of who did you meet together at the same stage? I think it's a character that I feel like rather than mine. And Chair was my lecturer of sociology. No, he knows. I mean, he can't say this is a long year. can I be protected, Chair?
I also need protection from God.
Yeah, and you have my protection. You know, funny enough, you know, I as a student, I actually never liked John Locke. John Locke is a philosopher from Britain during the 1600s, you know. But there are statements that he made, which made me to reflect as an adventure. Yeah. And because it is unusual enough to be employed as an under-laborer in hearing the ground a little and removing some of the rubbish that lies in the way of knowledge. And the reason why I think this is relevant is because he also argues that, you know, we need to dismiss the thing of some people training to have innate ideas and posturing and master builders. I think we've reached that stage in South Africa. And truth be told, as one Russian poet says, in the absence of truth and silence is a lie, we actually need to be confronting some of the realities. Let's not pretend it as if all is ready. Yeah. Not all is ready. And we need to confront these issues if we want to move towards the destination that we have all agreed on when we adopted the Constitution of the Republic in 1996. Now, if I have to say this thing within my area, in my space of operation, which is macroeconomy and finance, obviously we are in an open economy and we can't ignore the fact that we are operating in an international finance space. Some of these issues, comrades, we need to begin to focus on. And when I say comrades, I'm not excluding myself. He is my former president of New York. This one. But of course, now he's across the road. He's on the other side of the road. I'm also into his branding. You know, if it's more about friends, it's not really directed to the ANC. So please do excuse me when I say this. You know, Chair, it concerns me that even when we talk about issues of transformation, if we are looking at a key individual in our own space, and I'm talking about the finance, the fiscal policy space, the monetary policy space, a key individual for all that. That's right. You look at the minister that we have, it's that. Okay, probably not quite lying at the time, but he's black. Okay. And you must remember, Jay, in macroeconomics, you speak about production and you speak about income and spending. And at the end of the day, these four individuals that I'm going to talk about today are the ones that are key in actually assisting us in navigating through this polluted environment. You have the minister, who is there, okay? And we have the commissioner, who is that? And the other, okay? You have Kanyam, and the one of the reserve bank, he's still counting up the reserve bank. You have the DG. Yes, to the DB. We must make, we must call it nicely, you are a DB. Okay. You know, and in fact, the reason why I am saying this is that sometimes we must avoid, talking about transformation outside the country. We've made this fact. But the problem is that as Christ that we have made, we are unable to celebrate them. Because we want each person wants to posture as a master builder. Now, I am going to be asking a very pertinent question. Probably I will start with Dimitri. Because and I put it to you, sometimes you have to listen to us as adventurers. And the reason why I'm talking about the under-recorded context of your law, I'm actually talking about a person like myself. Not everybody who is an adventurer is an thinker. Some of us are intellectuals. And we think and we process information and we look at these issues. And we get worried when we look at things because one day we shall be counted as the people who were part of actually undoing of what Nelson Mandela did. You know, and it's very important for us to begin to interrogate these issues honestly and frankly. You know, you see, you know, the challenge that I have is that there has been a narration, one side of the story of the narration on the evaluation of currency. And of course I agree with Madam Manish, correct? We heard last week, I mean, PIC lost almost close to, close to 200 billion. That is fine. But I am saying to you, have we leveraged enough on the other side of the story, of the devaluation of currency? Because the devaluation of currency, of course it does increase the cost of borrowing, we can buy our debt, and the cost of exports becomes expensive, and so the story goes. But there is a positive side to that, you know, and that positive side is one that concerns me, that we are not talking about. And that is beginning to focus on what can we do within this environment with our currency that is being devalued, and begin to say, how do we exploit that? Now, the problem with the narration that says, you know, devaluation of currency, best story only, is that it actually makes everybody, it disables everyone. Everyone should kind of sit back and they don't look at the positive side of that. Now, I want to ask you, have we done enough in that on that side of the spectrum? And here, the other thing that I also wanted to know from the DG is that, you know, I don't envy you, DG, because let's be frank about this. The Cold War has existed between the Minister of Finance and the Commissioner is very unhealthy for all of us. It is stressing all of us. And DG, I want to understand from your perspective, and I'm putting you in a very difficult position here, in your own view, because I have tried, I've gone back and I've been trying to understand what is wrong with the strategy and the ADT of the South African receiver of revenue, because it was presented to us last year. The operating system was presented to us. And in my view, I was under the impression, and I think the commissioner has said today, Minister Nazanene supported that. Okay. Now, why has this delayed this thing? Because to me, if you look at the report that has been presented by the commissioner, I mean, we're in a very difficult economic environment. This does not mean that there are no areas that are of concern that one is going to place it. But, I mean, if you look at the story overall, you look at the fact that, you know, we are able to increase the compliance, irrespective of what other people are going to say. The fact that we've increased the compliance and we are finding that small businesses are coming up complying and they are paying, they are contributing, to me, it actually says something about the quality of citizenry that we are having in South Africa. Now, what is wrong with that? Let's just understand that if you can take this into consideration, what's wrong with the operating system? What is wrong? Because the results that are here are saying something is working there. I'm talking about the results that I have. And unfortunately for me, by the way, my PhD is on quality management research. So I manage by that. I'm unable to to, that's why I make it a bad condition. I can't operate in the space of imagination. You know, I don't operate in the space of imagination. I need facts before me. And when I speak, I need to speak with empirical data in front of me. Unless somebody told you that data, otherwise, then I can give them and say, well, I'm sorry, there was something wrong with the data presented to me. Now, what's wrong with the ethics? Why are we delaying this? And why are we not making sure that, because to me, if you look at all these key individuals, each one of them has their own strengths, and each one of them have gotten something very remarkable to the party, you know? And that's why I'm saying there are my sub-users here. Each one of you, I'm just talking about the space, and those key individuals I'm talking about are the space that I'm entrusted by the African National Congress to look after. You have all of you, unfortunately, those four key individuals who happen to be black. Are we really beginning to feed into the story that MSF can handle? No, I don't think so. Because the fact that despite such a bad, you know, the economy is contracting and we've been hoping and we've been reviving figures downward each time. At the same time, we have a story from France that says we've been able to collect 1 trillion 69 billion. And to me, that is a remarkable achievement. Having said that, I think I will leave that broad question to you and probably go to the commission, because both of you are here. And I'm telling you the questions I'm asking you, even if the minister was here, I was also going to tell him, because I think he did a fabulous job when he went out to the UN to calm down the financial markets to say, and what I said, we are getting our house into order. I'm not going to comment on things that are above me. I'm commenting about you because you are in my stage of operation. Okay. So, now, Chair, I need you to say this to the commissioner. I want the commissioner to probably advise us on one, whether if he could attribute some of the successes. I know you've counted some of them, but I'm not sure if you aligned that with the new operating system. And I'm not sure if the operating, probably that the new operating system will be in Sudan as well, maybe in the next quarter, but for now probably you can attribute the current connection to that. If you could assist us with that. Number two, I also want you to actually assist us in understanding why is there a challenge? Probably I should say, maybe give us a commitment that you want to, you actually do want to work with the collective team in actually taking the South Africa forward. Because each one of you have a responsibility to think beyond yourself, to think beyond your self-centered agendas and egos, and actually think about South Africa. Because right now in South Africa, what we do, unfortunately, has a negative knock-on effect to the wider society. Because people are learning schools, people are doing all these other things. And sometimes wanting to stay away, say people are going crazy. People want, when we start doing things that are not right, at the leadership level, they see us fighting, we're doing all these things, fighting is normal. Because we're role models. You know, and sometimes we forget that those basic things, and that is why today I'm adopting myself as an underlayman. As a best friend, I think I'm speaking my view, because in any case, I don't care what's going to happen. I'm already there. I'm already done. If you people are up there, there must be one, because you are going to join us. You know, but me, I'm not one. I think that's important. Jay, the other thing that I wanted to know from the commissioner. Now, I'm from Devon. Devon is the biggest port. You are removing the scanner from Devon and you are taking it to Bainbridge. Now, I know I'm disappointing my women complaint thinking. I want you to understand the rationale behind that. And maybe the commissioner is going to assist us to understand what is the rationale behind that. To me, the best point of call, by time, and let me use a layman's facility, in layman's language. When the whatever goods that are coming from wherever, they come together. That bridge is the second. It's the second station in your life. Now, why are we going there instead of starting at source? You will have to understand me, you know, Nina, I used to be the CEO of Salga, and for your own information, we once invited by a party of one municipality, and they were celebrating the God qualified for this opinion. It was a celebration. No, it's true. I went to that municipality. I thought it was a technique. It was a technical error. Now, the reason why I say this, the moral of the story there is that, you see, you're telling me now that I'm ignorant about the analog and about all whatever professors we're talking about. You see, you guys, we belong to different states. And from somebody like myself, I'm not in a space a commissioner. So I may not understand the rationale behind it. To me, the containers are arriving in Delhi. By the time they get paid, which they must have gone past Delhi. And therefore, I don't understand why we're moving the scanner, the global scanner from Delhi to take bridge. So that's the kind of logic. I'm just saying we have different logic. And do excuse me if this thing sounds like that mayor who invited me and was probably a mother surprised that I should be in charge. What is my own opinion? Okay. Now, and the other thing that I also wanted to find out from you, Commissioner, is that, you know, it's nice and good to talk about, especially where you are dealing with the number of disputes that you dealt with, you know? And I've recently come across to understand that, you know, Sahel has different all the processes. And if you can kindly enlighten us on that, what in the hierarchy of disputes, and because you also have your own audits, different audits, and the other level of intensity and so forth. So if you could kind of enlighten us on that. And if you could kindly give us as well, I'm more concerned about the figures that you gave us on you gave us the figure, but it is on page, if I'm not mistaken, page 16. Okay, I was looking at your progress on your AP strategic measures, okay? And there is where you are telling us that the total tax revenue collected, excluding customs, is 249. Your target was 249.1, but your achievement was 250. Now, you were saying the overachievement is largely to higher than expected CIT collection. Again, I'm coming back to the logic. You have an economy is correct. People are best. And then fund is collecting more on CIT. We would expect that, and even the Lord share the story as well. We just need to understand the logic behind that as well. Because when we are getting these overachievements, we want to make sure that these achievements are achievements that we ought to be celebrating truly. And Chair is he always intimidates me by looking at me like that under his glasses. I think it's time for me to shut now and let Tandy take over from but okay, Chai, no, but Che, I want to just invite you up. I'm Chai, but I wanted to say Che. you know, maybe DG and the Office of the Commissioner, I wanted you to probably say something on something that you both commented on. On this side, we have SARS, that says full of people, okay, in terms of their own targets and so forth, their ATP and so forth, and so forth. But on this other hand, we have a treasurer that is telling us that, hey, you know what, the revenue collection balance against debt service cost of an amount of 927 million, at the end of 2016 is higher than projected. Obviously, I understand why, but probably we need to be able to reconcile that. I'm not sure if you understand me. If you can be able to reconcile that at your level, say, maybe from your own perspective, to give us a sense that these things are somehow either it's a good story in terms of from your side, it's a good story in terms of reducing the deficit or the balance of payment. On your side, it is a bad thing, whatever. Whatever that you have to say on that is important for us to know. Because we don't want to treat everything as normal. And finally, I want to say, we need to make sure that in our own level, let's make sure that our own area space, we don't get into the stage of mastering that. You know, if we get into that stage, we will end up doing a very good story. We have a very good story to tell, but we are getting into the story of master pillars and we end up taking fun, and that's not good for the country and the district.
Okay, Tandi and Sepisa, yeah, just to draw the committee's attention, we've had 76 minutes and 6 people. At this rate, very limited time for the respondents to reply, but nobody should be precluded from speaking their mind, simply because they're coming towards the latter part of the queue. So, with the minister's permission, we'll have to extend the sitting for about 15 minutes at least. Over to Tandi.
Chair, as you say, you must practice us to speak less and end up with those who speak so that they can stay and deal with their problems. And Chair, you see, I'm taking the task here. I'm very worried to come under my post. You see what she and Magma people used to do to me. She's doing it today. You see, she's taking me to task. So my task is very difficult, but I'll try and no, you see, they used to do this to me, and your genius is where they engage you, and in a different space, in a different space, so I will not do what she's doing, because I'm in a different space. I've used that as an excuse. I'm in a different space. So let me back to Lamentations. There's an umbilical cord in linking staff and national treasure. So at no point anybody should even attempt to separate the work of staff and the work of national treasure. And I'm going to tell you where I'm saying this. You see, they national treasure is doing the focusing of the entire economy. So whatever the plans works on, it's on the basis of that national focusing. So there shouldn't be any confusion here about the role of this. And you see, we have achieved, now I'm going to speak about figures, I'm trying to sound intelligent. 1,069,983,000,000 rand. Now the real issues. The forecast that was made in the 2015 fiscal year is all about 1,081,012,025. And the actual achievement is 1,069. Now, I used my small computer, not the digital computer. It says one short of one, plus minus 1%. But you know what we've done? And if the M40C becomes a problem, you know what we've done? We reviewed the forecast for the current fiscal year so that it looks the way it should. So I'm not letting a fast DG and the commissioner, I'm just taking that. Right? And I've been trying to figure out, you know, a developmental play that sort of thing to use as a peer review mechanism in terms of their like, own performance. And I could not find a friend that I can juxtapose this to give us homework. it's not about the color of the skin and their skin health and everything else. It's a general premise of the economy. Now, what I will not do, I will not look at the effects of growth. I will look at the commodity prices affected last year. And that was affecting. You see? The commodity prices was put in our favor, and I'll use, for instance, oil as an example, the performance of the petrol sector, which takes a chunk of our own performance. So I looked at them and said, well, if that's the case, and projected going forward, it's still going to be the same challenge. We might even need another refocusing, downwards refocusing of the current projections as they said. Now, setting aside, Jay, the tenors are going to break bridge. I said they must come to the first aid. You see, I explained, and I'm going to explain to you why they said so. You see, this morning,
I'll be open. I think the commission and the teaching we looked what National Treasure under very difficult conditions were able to manage the finances of the country as well. We said this in our presentation. I think we all need to again congratulate you on being reappointed. I don't know what you completely said, but from where I sit, I think you are also the product of the progressive policies of the African National Congress. And I think we must say, President, you always had some noises, which are noises we should like to present different perspective. You are a product of this democratic government, which was called by the ANC. I got no doubt in my mind that if 1994 didn't come, you'd be where you are. So, despite the many noises you would want to suggest otherwise, you know, I know some sectors in South Africa don't like celebrating success. So how the way behind the success, they don't know. So I just think you must know that. And this committee, especially from the side that I'm coming from, when we interact with you and your institution, it's more of us trying to make you better. And saying that this kind of course you think that you must attend to. It's not that the pulling down, you know, it wouldn't help us. So I just thought that's very important. Some of the things was that I was reading to the document, and I think that applies just to what you know, people like the different profession in medicine, their own acronyms and so on and so forth, right? A key in here, the computer acronyms which have been used. I think that's very important to have a table to say exactly what is the meaning of the acronym so that we can interact with the documents without having to interact with it before we come to the committee. What is in the public arena is always the grading and so on, and everyone talks about the grading and so on, and right, so we must be concerned about what happens to our grading. But what I've realized that we seem not to be in the same wavelength as exactly what gets into the grading equation. I'll request the DG to probably just take us to educate us as to what gets into this grading equation so that we know as you talk about these things, you will do certain things who are either positively or negatively impacting that on the equation. DG, we have been interacting with some of our institutions, and one thing that I'm very passionate about is to deal with the variables that are within our control. Right. One of those things is the budget that we have. As Mr. Chairman, the National Treasurer, that also goes for such the money that we control. I've shared with I think with the CEO office that there are many things that we say, especially as politicians when we interact with the people for that say. Talk about infrastructure, that's what we're going to create jobs, we're going to deal with the localization, we're going to deal with the broad reach, the local empowerment, women empowerment, the empowerment. And I've argued that I must still be convinced otherwise that our own act, the PFA, sterilizes that intention. So since the 1910, we'll never. That's why, despite the spend that we've had, it comes to the children of life. We haven't made any dent when it comes to empowerment and when it comes to job creation. Because we can't have all those things in 10%. It just doesn't work. So, as real chair, and since the DGCN, and their business has been complaining about this thing, say, the CPFA is just not helping us. And I mean, I'm one of those people who fully understand because I've been on the other side, but we are supposed to educate on some of these things and use the TFA just as an assistance. So what I would like to hear from the DG, are we in any way looking at revisiting this act? And I think we need to consult with the business, small business, because all these things, this act,
better formation you are looking at. It just realizes what we are trying to do with this thing. What you end up having, we are having the big old boys benefiting again from the things that you do control. The charter and so on, we are trying to persuade business to embrace telecom compartment. But there are things that we can do ourselves. And I think those are things that we should concern ourselves more than what other people can do with their business. I think that's very important. If I was throwing something at teaching, companies go through the verification. Can I give you my hypothesis? If we were to go through government departments and do some training to them, can they still come up with their verification certificate? I can tell you that they say this month. They did that at 7 and 8. That's my hypothesis, and I leave it to you to try and prove or disapprove that. So what I'm saying is that, again, the things that we can control, I don't think we're doing enough to try it and use those things to transform this economy. Otherwise, we'll always come here and shade us of people who come to government and make money while we're on the marginal deck of the country. But I said, coming to the commissioner, I think much has been said about what has happened, and I call it a miracle. Economies like training, the thumb rule is that when the economy goes down, what you get as a tax also goes up. So it's direct proportionality between what you can collect and the performance of the economy. But I think we've been able to buy trend and achieve what France achieved. And I think as Africans, we should be able to, and we must say without any fear of contradiction, let's be able to celebrate success. Not celebrate with passion. Don't celebrate with passion. So, with those words, commissioner, I think as the ANC side, we are very eager about the achievements. Otherwise, the DG will be dealing with a different set of numbers, his deficit would be going the opposite direction, and so on and so forth. So, I'm saying there should be no doubt that we are celebrating the achievement of SAS under your leadership, under the leadership of those men and women who are SAS now. Again, there should be no doubt about our support for what you guys are doing there. And obviously, what happens once you achieve, we always expect more. So perhaps the question which goes with my felicitations to you and your team is, can you promise us better delivery going forward? This is not just the one day wonder. We have set ourselves a very high standard, and then you going forward, can't expect anything else. So, broadly speaking, I'm then saying, can you promise us here in the people of South Africa that the standards that you have set, yourself and the team and the whole team, are going to be able to keep it up, right? And perhaps as you answer the question, I know in your presentation, you have alluded to some of the things, but again, we will say, what are the main drivers of you achieving that better achievement? Voluntary disclosures, quickly. If you could share with us what is the nature of those voluntary disclosures and why we have people not obliged to attach obligations for, and are they only criminal activities which might have been involved, something like that. Another point, perhaps, I think my colleagues have also added to is the question of the nature of things which are being reported to the, I know not all of them, but broadly speaking, which are being reported to the case ombudsman. What are the nature of those issues? Again, on our procurement spend, commissioner, you also spend money for your own budget, right? I'll be very interested when you go forward for you to report on that to how you are doing as far as spending on their companies and like I said, their companies, not the so-called empowered companies, because I'm not able to explain what exactly that is. I'm looking at the flow-through principle, the money ends up in black hands, so that we have changed the economic ownership of this country. if we're able to do that, if we're able to do that going forward, I think it will also help us to impact on what my colleague has said here. Let's decide to think about measuring these things so that we can see there's an improvement or lack thereof. Not pretending to the suspension. I come from the Tarabish Kale and that area. I thought it's I happen to be the homeboy of the chair. So you know what I thought it's very short day where I'll go and spend a lot of money and I take out my credit card. And they say no, we're not taking the credit card. They want cash. Say, do you expect me to give you so much cash? I say, yeah, I must go out and get cash. Again, my view is that it's because there's a lot of people not wanting to. In fact, I said it to them, I said, we'll end up fighting. I said, no, it's because we don't want to pay. I would like to hear from you, how do you deal with that? There's so much money in my province, under my services. I can say that. You know? There's so much money, and I can tell you, those people, they don't pay tax. Big shops in Mr. Rashley. I'm referring to that because it's large, but there's no reason to believe that it only ends up there. And as to how we deal with the cash economy and make sure that those people still pay tax. Okay, I think that will be my contribution and my question. But I think congratulations, colleagues, both from Charles and from the and from the National Treasury.
All right, just to draw members' attention, I don't know if anybody's listening. It's 1 hour 37 minutes of questions. Now, normally, the answers are longer than the questions. So, I don't think members should come on. You bring this upon yourselves. And so you'll stay at 1:30. I really think this is not acceptable. So from now on, I'm just going to apply the rules. What we're going to do is the chair is going to check. And that means that I'll allow you to speak for 7 minutes. And if there's more time, there's a second round of questions. Otherwise, this becomes two monologues. How much of time will they require to answer all this? I'm not going to ask any questions. Because here's the time. If I did, it would take us to 1 p.m. I only want to make observations that one. And remember, we have a proof of the program for the third quarter. Now, the first thing to say, from my side at least, is I think actually your answers to the questions we raised previously are extremely comprehensive. It's unusual, DGM Commissioner, in my experience anyway, and I'm an old hat here, to get such comprehensive, detailed answers. I really want to compliment you. It's not just like the quality of the answers. Other thing, as old hat, I also know it's a technique, unconscious or otherwise, to flood us with information. So you obfuscate. Nothing wrong, Chief, I was in your position, I'd do the same. Commissioner, in your position. I'm not going to be pejorative. I mean, we got this thing here 5 minutes before we walked in here, right? The committee members. So clearly we haven't fully read it, right? So, but on the whole, you know what? It's very good. Really, I'm not congratulating you. Particularly, what I would like to suggest is I know that this takes a lot of time to do, involves a lot of staff. I don't think you need to go into this amount of detail, because we do not have the capacity or space or time to go through even that detail. It may help you and yourself to get clarity on issues because you're writing things out and you're thinking too. So if you play that sort of role, we play. But I don't think, with due respect, if committee members feel otherwise, they can tell me next week when we meet again. I don't think you need to go through this detail. Then the second thing to say is that you have, and I raised this in the study group initially and the committee, you invited us to Baybridge, right? Now, the reason we didn't come was because you're deeply disappointed that you have not named it after Inki Kiran, right? So that's why we decided to boycott it. But on a more serious note, DG and Commissioner, please know, the reason we couldn't come was because Parliament's calendar has been drastically reduced, and these people who have 48-page speaker bill, 72-page insurance bill, 224-page FSR bill, they're talking about carbon tax bill. Now we hear from Ken Brown as a public procurement bill. I don't know which planet the DG and the minister come from, right? And so basically, I think we must put our foot down now and do it, right? So I'm suggesting, because we're desperate in the third and fourth quarters, right? Look at our program at home. We do it immediately after Parliament rises in November with COVID. right? So we will negotiate a date with you. We can't disrupt your program either. We prefer maybe a Monday of the last week of the parliamentary term, or maybe the Monday immediately, Tuesday in that case, because Monday is his constituency day. So on the basis, Monday is very much on our agenda. On the order management, I'm accounting, I'm not asking questions, right? On the VMA matter, I raised it with the chair of Home Affairs. He actually was very, at that stage, positive. It was a fitting exchange, let me stress, right? He said, no, it's not a big issue. We can talk about sort of thing. So can you put some pressure on me? I need to speak with him before he arrives next week. But to also say what he repeatedly said, is this is one government. It's one ANC. Well, in a limited sense, it's one ANC today, right? But you know what I'm trying to say. In theory, it's one ANC, right? Now, you know what? You guys must sort this thing out. The committees that I've been part of, which said, hey, you sort these stuff in cabinet. The minister of the department that loses out mustn't come and hassle us in parliament. Unless something fantastically new is going to be drawn into the discourse. But you see, it's a simple thing. No one's rushing to process the bill as far as I know. So you've got between now and August to sort this matter out. I will speak to the minister on behalf of this committee on our side. Sort this matter out. Don't jump up with your problems. It's one cabinet and sort it out. But for what we hear, the committee's view, you can take the except one thing and maybe we can clarify something for you. From what we hear, not knowing the bill fully, what you're saying, Commissioner, makes a lot of sense to us. What the DG is saying also makes a lot of sense to us. It's just terminus, Commissioner, what you're saying. So on that, at this case, unless we know otherwise, we are supporting you, Commissioner, and the DG. The rest of my questions we can drop, right? Although to be fair, I should make this clear as a chair. When it belongs to the entity, Commissioner, it's not about you. You come and present us the operating model. I don't think it's fair to expect politicians anywhere in the world to understand the intricacies of the model. Certainly, I don't know. I don't remember what the model was. So when we say we approve a model, it's not after having got expertise from Antonia or Dumitani or somebody and looked at the model and so on. I think in broad sense, we don't have any difficulties with the model you present to us. But it's not a bit like we actively scrutinized it and thought about it and compared it to other you know, models in developing countries. We don't actually know. We're not experts like you are, or you've become, frankly, in the short time you've been there. And your colleagues are certainly are because you've been there longer. So what I'm saying in short is that, yes, we sort of approve of it, but it's not that we painstakingly address the issue. And I don't think either DG or you, Commissioner, can expect of a committee that will be so technically equipped as to do that. But the proof of the pudding, as the committee is saying, is in the results. Yes, maybe you're sitting a bit here and then, Commissioner, but overall, you know what? The result is, you know, I think the point that Lisa makes is a crucial one. It is very unusual. Even Sadia deals with me about financial and economic issues knows that when the economy is sinking in our day, it's unusual to get actually the targets you got. So in that sense, I think the message is clear. I don't think we can simply approve or disapprove of the model with due respect. But what can't is the results. And that's commendable, as everybody's been saying. But my questions are these now. Let's structure a meeting. They're going to sit here till 1:30, and nobody can leave because all of your contributions, much more than I did, right? Yeah, we must think about all these things. From now on, you will guide me. We are taking my heels here now. I think we're taking advantage now. We'll just go on and on and on. I've repeatedly said, comrades, colleagues, while the inputs are very good, the outcome is what matters. What is going to come out of this? What is our little reward, Antonio, the decisions we've taken? Right? In fact, to be quite fair, this is an effective committee. We should be spending the entire meeting looking at the answers and taking it a step forward. Yeah, but then you are also complicit in this thing, right? We'll excuse you because of childcare, but the truth is now, I'm not going to allow you anymore. And this is just, once it started, I couldn't stop. Who am I maybe being given space because he's new, right? And he's just flexing his muscle and all that. The rest of you, we're sticking to 7 minutes in each round, and after that, you come in. No, I'm not questioning the quality of what you say. I really like what Makosi said, right? Which is very, very good, the richness of a context to explain the questions she asked. But I think this has to be 7 minutes, no more.
not on this occasion. Sometimes we have a lot of space where the submission is faced by 11:15. They don't come back and say, Eunice, why are you allowing more people to speak? There must be, the chairperson must be given some latitude. It's about sensing something new is being said here. So when I mean 10 minutes to be so, I don't mean I'm going to stop you at 7. If you are saying something that's likely to be new and you haven't thought about it in the 20,000 years of India, nobody said it, hey, you can speak for more than 7 minutes. Right? So in short, I really think we have structured this like this. Really, the start of the teaching. Because on the co-termination, I think what different people in different ways, some nudgingly and some more overtly, have said, hey, get your act together. If there's one message that's coming out here, get your damn act together. You know what? Not fed up. With the minister, with the commissioner, with you, everybody. Right? I don't blame my party for this thing and my constituency. Nothing. You're all fed up. Although, who has to be brought to talk? I don't know who the whip of the committee is going to be, because his party never speaks as still the non-clergy of African, Indian, and colored, who primarily mean African, but the term, collective term black. All people are colored. Right? So, even telling myself qualifies to be black, right? My color. It's an political term. Now we've got a new term, which I think was going to December 27th. Africans are bound to descend. I love that, because anthropologically, you're right. We rejected the term Bantu and apartheid because it's demeaning, right? But anthropologically, that is the term that is used. Even much of anthropologists use that term. Strangely. But they don't use it as a pejorative sense of self-hosted, right? So that's very new. I didn't mind it getting on a bit more on that, but it's just relevant to the thing. So, I think really, Gigi, I've given you 20 minutes, which is 20 minutes, or you can share the 20 minutes between you. But just reply in a 54.
Let me not make the promise. Let me just get on with it. Honorable Kekana is right. For some of the things that we do, some of the things that we talk about, it makes a lot of sense to look at impact. For others, it's a bit complicated because we're contributing towards an objective, but our own role is very small. Now, we can sometimes, when things work well, want to claim credit for everything, but the truth is, we have to be honest and honorable and humble to accept that such things we can only influence in a very small way. And this relates to a number of questions that honorable members asked. So I'm saying we will make sure that we try to signal where is appropriate the impact, but in some instances, we may not be able honestly to do that. The appropriate, by the way, the NDPG, the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant, it's got two windows, they used to call it. There's a bit of it that meant to help municipalities with capacity, to be able to prepare the applications in a manner that enables them to access the money. Yeah, but it takes that someone sort of acknowledging that we have some shortcoming and it must be, which sometimes takes long for people to admit. We would prefer not to understand on the jobs one. But honorable member, we would prefer that, and we have tried to simplify the process. We have moved the program from where it was previously located, the DBSA, now managed fully internally within the treasury. In part because we're trying to really speed up what it does. Just to put the program in perspective, it has achieved quite something. I won't want to pretend that it's perfect, but overall, so far, combining the private sector money and the public sector money, it has induced investments of the magnitude of 11 billion plus. Now, that's a very important indicator. As much as we would like 100% expenditure, and we will strive to do better, but we shouldn't be troubled so much at once. I tell people, I say, look, people are reasonable. We would rather explain sometimes why we have not spent, rather than spend so that we get hit off the money. And we come here and we say 100% of the column. Because, I mean, no one really cares, maybe it's wrong to say no one, but it may not be achieving the kind of impact that we want doing it that way.
on the issue of whether there are still gaps in law to deal with the basic rules and stuff, there will always be scope to improve the legislation. Honourable members will know that the current TLAB before this House, which we're grateful for what the community does, and we know the pain we inflict on you with this very long piece of legislation, but it is in part about doing that. There will always be a scope for improving. This is an area which is really gaining traction globally. And it is supposed to work like that, because individual countries can only do so much with this kind of thing. The pressure is now really on. I mean, at the G20, just months ago, I mean, the discussion amongst finance ministers was a lot more pressure has got to be brought to bear on countries that won't want to sign up to this voluntary or what is automatic exchange of information. So those who dodge paying taxes, the places for them to hide are getting fewer and fewer. And that's the way to approach it. Doesn't matter how good our own laws can be, but if people have got a way to hide somewhere else, the effect of the laws. The question that Honorable Lee has asked, connected to also Honorable Gutierrez, I remember which other Honorable member, and that I think Honorable Makosin, because they, which connect growth and revenues. One, we don't, unlike other people, Honorable Lee, we don't have the, in our case, the ability to come every time and say, and pronounce on our forecast and their implications for revenues. For obvious reasons, because you can't have a budget as a moving target. You can't, I mean, otherwise the credibility gets questioned. We do watch what happens. We do internal tracking of what high-frequency data means for the overall growth projections, revenue, and so on, and begin to prepare ourselves for October accordingly. I will say, though, that we have watched and we see the reasons for the government revisions focus that have been made by, for instance, more recently, the IMF. One of the things that people miss a lot about the relationship between GDP and taxes is that the relationship is not 1:1. In other words, a given change in GDP does not lead to an exactly proportionate change in taxes. The answer to this, as if we knew it would be asked, is on page 45 of budget review. If you look there, we do show the tax to GDP multiplier at the bottom, as we show Honorable Gutierrez, because I don't believe this line at the bottom here. So you see that in some years, this number is about 1.4. It's a number called the tax buoyancy. Taking that, Mr. Minister, well, it is very material. Because the concern that honorable members have is a justified one. When they see people saying the economy is slowing down, they are correct to anticipate that if you just do the sums, then the chances of that revenues are probably going to fall short. But it is not a 1:1. That's a simple point one is making. It is not so that the relationship isn't there or in the rich. I'm just saying that if GDP slowed down by 1 percentage point, it may not be correct to assume that revenues will similarly have to be revised by a corresponding percentage because of that that multiplier thing that I'm talking about. In our case, we're still convinced for this year, we're still convinced that we will most likely achieve the revenue target that we put out, most likely achieve the fiscal consolidation that we put out. I qualify it, I say most likely. There are a number of reasons why we believe so. One is the fact, this thing that I talked about, because we have assumed, if you look at that, if you look at that table, you will see that this tax buoyancy in the recent past has been 1.4. In that table, we show it as 1.2. So there's a likelihood that, in fact, our revenue estimate might be a little bit more conservative than what we can actually achieve. That is part of the reason why we have this. But we also have these initiatives that the Minister has tasked the Chief Procurement Office to put in place, which we anticipate would help us achieve by 2018-19 savings of the magnitude of about 25 billion in a year. The number may not be 25 right away in this year. On the occasion of the budget vote speech, the minister did already enumerate a number of areas where these savings have already been secured. In other words, there have been interactions with contractors, negotiations of discounts, certain ways of procuring have been abandoned and replaced with new ones, like for instance the advertisements of tender, they are now on that quarter. Yeah. So in a way, those savings we think would also help us make sure that even if there were to be, in the unlikely event that there were to be some downward revisions in the revenue projections, growth and revenue projections, we would still be able to achieve the fiscal consolidation path that we were talking about. The cost containment measure is not, and I want to appeal to members that let's look at it this way. It's not always going to be possible, like we've done here, that to show that 20.2. That's not all the savings that there is in the letter. We showed it in a way in a table. I think if it's not in this budget review, it will be last year's one. Where we're showing that the targeted area of expenditure, the area where we sought to reduce expenditure, or at least reduce the rate at which expenditure grew, were indeed slowing down. In other words, they were either growing or contracting in negative. In other words, if you work out growth rate year on year, it was negative, or it was slower every year than the previous year, even if it's positive. That is what. So I can understand people want a number, but sometimes you know, we can give you a number only because we believe you wouldn't be able to work it backwards. But we're not that dishonest. We know when it's not possible to work out a number, and we shouldn't try to do that. We'd rather present it in a way that can give you the assurance that what we undertook to do, we are doing, and it is working. But a specific number may not be something that is easy to get to. On one more aspect, I expect that sometimes we do things too quickly and that people miss them. The 22 million, by the way, that went to ESCOM came from the sale of older assets, and it was characterized as because the 13.96 that government had there didn't mean much to government, no influence over how things at Vodacom were happening, and so on and so forth. One example, pronounced happened, the money has been in the hands of governments or National Revenue Fund that went to. There is now going forward a process to develop a more elegant framework to make this determination in consultations, broader and so on. But it is important to note, as the Deputy President have indicated and the Minister earlier in Parliament on different occasions, the process is not standing still and waiting for that day. You would have seen that the process is in so far as, for instance, the airline investments of the state. There's a process underway there to look at how best do we rearrange that portfolio in a way that ensures that they've got a stronger airline, possibly bigger, more efficient, and one that helps achieve the developmental objectives that we want to achieve. The starting point is not to say save. The starting point is to say what are the objectives that we want to achieve. And what should then be the design architecture of what the state owns that will enable us to achieve those objectives better. So if then part of the process may entail getting the private sector to co-invest with government, so be it. If in a few instances, it turns out, as the President pointed out, that certain entities have become irrelevant today, insofar as government development objectives are concerned, then the right decision gets taken. At the same time, there may be instances where the objectives of government suggest that government has to pay a little bit more in a particular space. So you don't start with the means should not be confused with the end. In this process. That's one of the most important ones to make on this. There was a suggestion that I should respond. I can understand because of the way far appeared on the board of the business.
one of the mistakes I never make is to take the commissioner's those reports to me. It hasn't happened. And I'm very firm on it because I have advised at different circumstances. When, for instance, at the risk of talking out of school, but let me use the concrete example. When General Kenneth approaches Treasury to say he wants his entity to have a separate vote because that will show independence, I want to be able to say to him with a clean conscience, but I can understand the objective you want to achieve, which is total financial independence from SABS, but the instrument through which you want to achieve it may not necessarily be the only one on the best. Because creating a vote imposes on you more responsibilities. They may not be what you want to achieve. For you can just be one program and the money goes in and goes out to account fully. And I gave you the example. I say, here's one example. FICA is yet another example. State Security is still yet another example under the Treasury. Now, the moment we act as the Treasury in a way that suggests that by appearing there, all of a sudden, we can impose more, call it reporting responsibilities, accountabilities, than it happens with other departments, then we'll make a mistake because we'll be undermining a possible way of addressing concerns that exist across the system. Now, this is not to say, so that I'm understood, but tomorrow when I say to the commissioner, this is what on ABC is said by yesterday you said in Parliament. Insofar as France is going to report on finance issues, like all the other departments or entities of the state, Treasury has got that call it responsibility over them. I get confused with my pages. I suspect that let me get away with that one. On the triple PFA, I think it's a very, very important issue this. And often people who are on the same side fight and over it and disagree over it. I have spoken to some business people. I usually ask them when they make the comments, I can't do this now because I'm in Parliament here. But I usually say to them, give me your hands, because there are some facts I have which might show that what you're saying is not quite exactly what you know, as you say. This is a very complex area. But what I would propose to you, I don't know if it would be offline or in the committee. We can come and, I don't know how can I approach it here, this ground. We can come and say, look, the law says this. This is how it has been applied. From the information we have at this moment, this is what has been achieved. But at the same time, these are the failure weaknesses in the current system. And these are the proposals on how the system should be changed so that we can achieve better results. There are two things that are sometimes we're going to mediate the tension between here. On the one hand, you get something which we have written into the constitution and the law in our case in South Africa, which is the issue about paying transparently, efficiently, you know, and cost effectively and all that, which has got a lot of appeal. I must tell you, it is such a dilemma if before I've come across people who may be wanting to really have the bad businesses, but they are confronted with numbers. Because a department, excuse me, like mine, you get a fixed budget, right? If you have got to use it to achieve certain results, you want to buy things as cheaply as possible. Now, this is not to say that tax is always the best, and I'm not addressing that for him. But the tenant can do matter so far as the weight you assign to price, which is the bigger percentage now, 80 or 90, depending on the size of the contract, then other things. The more, the less weight you give to price, the higher the likelihood that government would end up being able to buy less. It's a mathematical thing. Now, when I say this,
I'm not suggesting that transformation should be by flesh, should be understood. But then the country must make an assessment beyond which point we think transformation is becoming too expensive. I was not for this. I was not for it all. It requires a conversation and people to agree to say, we've made this progress, we have failed to make this much, and this is the case. So that's the tension on one side, being able to buy cheaply so that we can buy bigger quantities and advance. Yet another element of transformation, which is, could be the building of schools, building of infrastructure in areas that have been historically actually excluded and so on and so forth. On the other hand, the transformation objectives, which are very important, because if they are not achieved, they could very well be addressed to the rest of the stuff. So I'm saying that I would be happy that we come with information all times, maybe not in a context that's confining like this, have a workshop, because the amendments of this bill that Mr. Brown referred to present us with an opportunity to deal with, among other things, like those. The Honourable Makosini makes a very, very important point. This is probably going to be the last one. I'm not suggesting that I've turned around. I've covered many of them.
Not well, but we're running out of time. Quickly, to
the yes. The question about leveraging the positives out of a depreciated currency. I would say there has been a leveraging of it. I mean, you would have read last week or 2 weeks ago, or the tourism have been taken off. But you would also recall that it has had to be aided by some stepping back a bit insofar as the visa regulations and so on are concerned. I do think that we haven't taken as much advantage of it as we could have. I would put that, and then I don't have to elaborate. I just think that a lot of the time, for reasons sometimes unexplained or unexplainable to me, we tend to obsess with the negative aspect of something and get blinded to what could just be the positive. In fact, even in instances where we shouldn't be, it was only a exchange rate, there was a heated debate when there were massive capital inflows in 2000 and the currency was getting strong. People made us believe that they were ready if the exchange rate would just not be a problem. Exports would take off and stuff. And sometimes I get as polite with some people when I meet them. I say, I'm looking at the current account balance. Where are these exports that you promised? Thank you very much.
What I suggest is you could...
Yeah, it would be remiss for me. I mean, the spirit with which the committee members have been interacted with this, from the chair to everyone, has been a very, you know, pleasing one. We don't come here to be pandemic, but we're human too, we still love, you know.
Deserve the compliments. Okay, very quickly, what we can do is, Antonio, you've got all the questions anyway, right? So we can carry over some of this to the next quarter. So go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll quickly say this. DG covered the issues on BEPS. We share the same sentiments. On the issue of budget, the issue of target setting, we have what you call a new analysis working committee that sets the target between the two parties. And certainly on the test buoyancy, on the questions that we elaborated to yourselves on page 10, we do indicate there that the estimate that the minister put was 10.81, and the test points was 25.6, and what we achieved, in terms of test budget was 26. So what the DG was saying relates directly to not the impact of how the economy is performed, but how the tax to GDP performs. The other issue that I want to pass here is the measure of the operating model, which was raised by Honorable Tekano, with respect to other performance, with respect to transformation of women. Certainly, we take that very seriously, and we are can commit here that we will meet the parity. The positions that are outstanding certainly are going to be filled, as indicated in our opening statement, it will be filled by women, precisely because we're very much sensitive to this matter. With respect to the issue of the health refunds, I can confirm categorically in this meeting that such a malfunction as L we have under my stewardship, nor I think before my stewardship, we have money in order to meet the target. But let me go back to the chair before I forget. Last year when we posted the results of outcome, The initial target by the minister was 974 billion. Trust delivered 986 billion. So if that is a matter of trying to hold on budget on refunds, we would not have met that target. Now, in this particular instance, given the difficult economic conditions under which we operated, given the fact that we had other initiatives, we had set ourselves across the whole spectrum of the organization that we want to meet the MTVP as 10.81. That was the target. So we were able to meet what was advised by the minister, and therefore the issue of that refund withholding does not take effect here. It doesn't arise. We can assure, we can call the Auditor General to go through the books. We do not do that because it would be criminal in order for us to reach the target using other means. But if there are cases where interim refund is taken longer, my colleagues and the public can raise us through the tax ombudsman and to go on case by case, and we'll deal with this matter. And where officials have erred, of course we'll take measures in terms of consequence management. It is not the duty of us to be withholding money that is due to the taxpayer. Certainly, we want to say here to thank all South African taxpayers for being tax compliant. Would not have reached this milestone had they not been in a position to pay their statutory duties. And we also want to thank the committee for the support, and we want to thank our employees who have worked beyond the call of duty on this matter. With respect to the question raised by Honourable Liz, we don't discuss as such taxpayers' information in public. But one thing I can assure you, every flight that leaves any airport, there are instruments and mechanisms that are put in place. And SARS stays one particular point in it, and therefore I'll not be able to answer the questions that you have raised. If there are customs matters, my customs officials shall have dealt with the matters as and when they arise. I'm over very clear on this. Whether the aircraft left on the 7th, left on the 10th, protocol and standard operating procedures are done across the spectrum without fear or favor. That's how the leadership takes this matter seriously. It is for this reason that we have the gentleman called Jesse Kalitus, who is responsible for customs and national taxes, to deal with any infringement and matters that are in his purview. Because of current chairperson, gender parity was responded to. Honorable Makosi asked, did we achieve this milestone using the operating model? The answer is categorically yes, because we were changed in August already, putting in process measures and processes to deal with how we're going to deal with the challenges that the economy is facing. 90% of the achievements that we have today are attributable to the operating model. One, we have Sengai Matibula, who has joined the organization in January, because started already in August. We have the new chief officer for human resource and capital, and we have the new chief officer responsible for customs. And therefore, all this working together to have okay of us and putting all our minds together in driving the result, because I am not a leadership at the time. And therefore, at that time when they join, they have to push and put the pressure in terms of what they're supposed to be. Now, with regards to the lamentation that one of the course spoke about taking the scanner away from there, then putting it in... There is a scanner in Durban. We took an old scanner that was in Durban, put it in Limpopo, in Brighton.
I can ask, what about scanner and industry, right? I mean, let's not start that, right? Carry on, please.
My two colleagues will add up. Jonas will speak on slide number 6, and will speak also on slide number 10. But Mr. Sengali will speak about the indirect taxes educational program that came from Honorable Tani. That we may be speaking about some of these good programs, but if we don't get into the issue of communication and education, they don't mean nothing because they become dishes that take place within the organization.
Now, we've got a three-line whip, 2 o'clock, so I think we really must stop at 1:30. Can you please finish? You can come with follow-up questions in writing, maybe, but I'll come back to you. Who's speaking next? Mr. Matibule?
Yeah.
Just go with a brief, pithy response, please.
Thank Thank you, Commissioner Chair and Commissioner Mosh. There was a question around the new system that we introduced to deal with taxpayer certificates as to what are we doing to actually ensure that we reach out to the previously disadvantaged communities in terms of the use of the system. I'll say we actually jointly worked with National Treasury, which was actually linking with the supply chain management system, and the two systems are joined. And in terms of communication, our communication strategy is actually together aligned with the National Treasury. But importantly, is to ensure that we leverage on the current infrastructure of the two soul centers, where trust will be present actually to assist those testers that may not have the infrastructure in terms of applying for tax clearance certificates through the system. We also have more tax units that are going into the remote areas where there are no computers or facilities, where our staff actually educates and also shows the public about how to use the new application system. So we have actually made very good progress, and the point of it is making that much easier in terms of applying. And I think the key issue that this new system has actually taken off over 1 million taxpayers that used to flow into the SARS branches. They are now doing most of the things electronically.
Okay. Very quickly, next one.
Yeah. The next one was about the professional tax. Why are we collecting more revenue yet the economy is not performing good on the company's side? One of the initiatives that we also started was to look at paragraph 93, which is the estimation for payment of professional tax. In the historical sense of things, we used to focus on the large businesses. But this time, late last year, we started focusing on smaller businesses. But the Act actually covers all the company income tax. So through this process, we actually collected over $1 billion and from small and medium companies through the paragraph 93. But the key and very important aspect is that the small businesses have actually been carrying us in terms of revenue collection, because we've seen quite a massive improvement in them in complying and as well as paying the taxes compared to large businesses. But large businesses in the last quarter have actually really picked up. We've seen quite good payments that are coming through as well in the last quarter of the previous year. Thank you.
Chair, I'm not going to take too long. Okay, then, Chair, I appreciate that. Chair, I think there was a question that was raised around SARS focus on cigarettes and not only other stuff. Part of the challenge that we have, and it's one of the things that I'm responsible for, strategy, communicating, and enforcement. And I think that's where Ole would be much more interested in, that the issue around communication and simplifying some of the stuff that we do is very crucial, particularly to our ordinary people. But it's quite crucial, Chair, to indicate that unfortunately we don't control the mode of communication out there. The media communicate what they decide to want to communicate. There's a substantial number of draft busts, gold busts that we do across the various ports of entries, that it would have been great if they were communicated. But as you rise in check, I think one of the things that we're inviting to tell is to assist you to try and communicate this thing about a trillion rand that SARS has been able to collect. But I'm not so sure that people have a better handle on what a trillion rand is. And we have tried to simplify it so that when you go out and talk to ordinary people, it might be easier. It's the anchor note from the Reserve Bank called 50 rand, laid out from the Office of the South African Revenue Service to boardwalk in PE on an N1. That's the
quantify the distance it will take you. So we put every 50 rand from SARS offices to boardwalk in PE. Alternatively, for people that live within where the double decker buses get used, is about 187 double decker buses filled with 200 rand loads.
It's 128, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Alternatively, you can take 1,832 minibuses filled with 10 rand of those.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now, can I, Mr. Lee, if you want to ask a question, is anybody else going to give a lot? Okay. Very quickly, can I, just go ahead.
Just and my apologies. I just, there are a number of my questions which haven't been asked, and so you know I'm quite happy to get written answers within next week or so. That's okay.
I think within 10 days, because if a comprehensive reply is within 10 days or 10 to 14 days maximum, can you forward the questions to Alan? We will interfere with them, right? And it's, and Antonio's got this. We forward it to you, and then somebody carry over. Look, can I clarify something? Did you hear what Makosi said, right? See, I think what Mahoshi is saying, if I understand her, is that there's considerable potential here in this financial sector. And it's very demographically represented. And you need to get your act together. If you're under these difficult circumstances that are doing so well, how much better would you do if you all cooperated? So I think really it's reasonable to suggest that the minister, the commissioner, the president, the leader of government business, and to the extent it's relevant, ANC head office will sort this matter out. We cannot continue that. It can't just involve ministers, the commissioner, the president. That's the signal we are getting. We cannot afford this thing, DG. I'm addressing you here directly because you are treasurer. And commissioner, sort this thing out. And the crucial people are commissioner, the minister, the deputy president, the president, and the ANC office together. As they said, it's relevant. We have doubt is what we're communicating to you. We cannot afford this thing. This impassive, I think. What is this? Please, when you come back in August, we are going to get very tough on that matter. Okay. So having said that, colleagues, we have got, we only 2 more minutes, we've got the program for us. If you notice from the meeting, we have the release was there. We're having joint meetings, Cindy, so we can't change the Wednesdays because the NGOP committee is saying that when you get briefings or not, they are the huge pressure because they deal with so many issues. They want us to do, we go through them. This is a casting stone, but as far as possible, we stick to it. Are there any comments or questions? You can bring them up next Tuesday if you like, but for now, do I take it that I can send this to Charlie Beer as our draft NGOP chair? Oh, the one thing I'd like to add, sorry, is the Davis Tax Committee. I think we really shouldn't the Davis Tax Committee, right? So can we add that? Even with the fourth term. And the other thing that struck me is when we come against city, I think this idea of the ombudsperson, maybe we start at 9 on that day, right? We get the ombudsperson in the tax industry. So we add the ombudsperson. Now on the land bank, after we gave you this draft, Dee, can you help us here? We have to nominate to the president, you know, the minister. Are there six vacancies? Now, I don't understand if the term of the current board members lapses in December this year. So we can do this in August, right?
The sooner the better.
It's not an option. Okay. You can negotiate with Parliament Speaker to extend the week of Parliament by a week and to pay for that. Because, I mean, there's no other sitting. So we will have to add in the land bank. Who advertises you to, for Parliament?
The advertisement is brought, it invites, I think the word in the law is invite relevant committees in Parliament to also make nominations. But the nomination thing is very broad. People apply on their own or get nominated.
But who decides the policy process does?
No, the Parliament can run its own process or have the names that are established.
Fine. Let's do this. We will get Cindy and Alan to discuss this matter, decide on how it was done in the past, refer it to the committee chair. Next Tuesday, I'll bring a proposal here. Thank you. Thanks once again to both teams. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.